Palestine action. Overreach by the law? Staying with the law, I'm a foreign criminal and I'd be out of here.
Once somebody has been convicted and sentenced, then they will be immediately deported because it is wrong that the British taxpayer is paying for them in our prisons and they are taking up space in our prisons that we need.
Plus, drivers over 70 face eye tests every 3 years. And down on the farm...
J.D. Vance's 19-vehicle motorcade has arrived in the Cotswolds, but what sort of reception has the US Vice President been getting? I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Chipping Norton.
Those stories and more follow the 7 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio... On the LBC app and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 7 o'clock, ministers have announced new plans to step up the deportation of foreign criminals from the UK. Another 15 countries have signed up to the Deport Now, Appeal Later scheme, with any human rights challenges to be heard from abroad. It follows plans announced yesterday to deport foreign offenders as soon as they are convicted. Prisons commentator David Shipley says it could help reduce pressure on jails.
There isn't one silver bullet. And you look at all the changes that are coming with the sentencing review and the courts review and this. It's just about trying to buy another 500 places or another 1,000 places. And I think deporting foreign nationals will be popular. They obviously have fewer supporters here in the UK, so it'll be maybe an easier one to do.
The broadcaster Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike in Gaza. The IDF has confirmed it targeted correspondent Anas al-Sharif, accusing him of being the head of a terrorist cell in Hamas. The Qatari-owned news channel says it was an attempt to silence its coverage. Jody Ginsberg from the Committee to Protect Journalists has been speaking to Al Jazeera.
Journalists are civilians and should never be targeted in war, and they must cease and desist. We also need to see far greater action from the international community.
Australia's become the latest country to say it will recognise a Palestinian state in September. Ministers are considering tougher driving penalties as part of a push to reduce road deaths. A new road safety strategy is expected later this year. LBC's Fraser Knight has more details.
The suggested changes would be the biggest shake-up in road safety laws in almost two decades and could see the drink drive limit lowered in England and Wales to come into line with Scotland, where the change was made in 2014. It could also have tougher punishments for not wearing a seatbelt and not having insurance. And if you're over 70, there could be a mandatory eye test every 3 years, with people who fail it being banned from getting behind the wheel.
Firefighters are dealing with a large gorse fire on Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh. Emergency crews were called to Holyrood Park yesterday afternoon. Parts of the UK are braced for a fourth heatwave of the summer. Temperatures could rise to the mid-30s in the coming days, with a yellow heat health alert issued across parts of England from midday. It warns of a significant impact to health and social care services. In the city, the FTSE 100 will reopen this morning at 90.95. It closed down 5 on Friday. The pound buys $1.34. and a euro 15. LBC weather. Dry, hot and sunny in the south, cloudier in the north and some heavy showers developing in the west. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Oh, bad traffic. Great news, isn't it? More time in the car. Joy. Maybe you don't feel it. Maybe you don't drive a Lexus NX yet. But when you do, you'll see the positive of peak hour. The delight in a detour. The love of the long way. The Lexus NX plug-in hybrid. Experience amazing before you arrive.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning. 4 minutes after seven on Monday, August the 11th. Do you think it's a crime to carry a poster saying, I oppose genocide, I support Palestine action? Well, the Metropolitan Police appear to, although no charges have been brought, and more than 500 people were arrested as a result. It's a rather overstep of the law. We'll look at that in more detail. Plus, in a related story, five Al Jazeera journalists killed in an Israeli airstrike in Gaza.
Journalists are civilians and should never be targeted in war, and they must cease and desist. We also need to see far greater action from the international community.
Jody Ginsburg is from the Committee to Protect Journalists. Political stories here at the UK. I'm a foreign criminal. Get me out of here. Deportation's on the way, plus...
The Home Secretary is drawing up plans to change the law to stop human rights rules from being used by criminals to avoid deportation. I'm LBC's Natasha Clark with the exclusive story.
Approaching 70 or in your 70s or above, drivers will face eye tests every 3 years. And here comes the sun. Yes, we'll get you ready for what they call another weather bomb. It's going to be hotter than Barbados.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let me get one thing absolutely straight. I would imagine many of you think that I'm hideously biased, and I understand that, that's it. There aren't many presenters, I don't think, on the radio or on TV either, who have as much sympathy for the cause of the Israelis in the dispute than me. I think you'd be hard-pushed to find anyone. But I don't think I want to live in a country where holding a poster saying, I oppose genocide, I support Palestine action means you get arrested? Isn't that an overreach? 522? Now, it is thought the highest number of previous arrests previously by the Met was the poll tax riots in 1990. That came in at 329. Now, there was a degree of violence both among the protesters and among the police, so it was very different. In the instance on Saturday, I read that two of them were women in their 80s. Now, again, Palestine Action are useful idiots to Hamas and Hezbollah and the terrorists. Palestine Action have threatened the defence of this nation by taking an aircraft out of commission. And I think I probably agree with Palestine Action being classed as terrorists, but simply holding a poster? Well, the arrests said, of course, followed after Yvette Cooper prescribed Palestine Action. Speaking with me last week, the Home Secretary defended the decision, said those who believe it to be a non-violent organisation are wrong.
The prescribing process is based on very extensive security advice and security assessments to me as Home Secretary, which I have to take immensely seriously. That security assessment looks at the violent attacks, injuries, attacks on national security infrastructure, and also includes assessment and some really troubling information about that refers to future attack planning as well. That's the basis on which this organisation has been prescribed. And let's be clear, this is a narrow organisation. This is not about protesting about Palestine, which huge numbers of people lawfully do. I understand there are people who don't really know the details of this organisation, who may be thinking about protesting, but who don't know. What I would say to them is more information is likely to be revealed about this organisation as various trials go through the legal system. And really, this is not a non-violent organisation.
Now, this idea of mass arrests, which the protesters was going for, was something I put to Assistant Commissioner of the Met, Matt Twist, last week. He told me...
We've got an experienced command team, and as we've discussed several times before about public order, what's really important is the police have to deal with things as they find them. We also have to enforce the law as it is, not as others may wish it to be. So there's a lot of plans going in now to deal with... If people do turn up and show support for a prescribed organisation, then the police will respond appropriately.
But what of their tactics that they want to go for mass arrest? They almost want to, outnumber you or swarm your colleagues. Yeah. What of that?
So we've seen that before, haven't we, in different sort of protest guises, and the plans that we have in place, we'll be ready to deal with it.
So why did the protesters turn out? Well, this is what they told LBC.
Anybody who holds one of these signs is also complicit as a terrorist. It's an absolute absurdity. And, you know, we've got to stand up and be counted.
I expect to get arrested. Yes. Well, obviously, I don't think I'm a criminal. That's not the person I am.
And the arrests did follow.
What a waste of police time! What a waste of our money!
Shame on you!
Now, one of the people who attended was Moazen Begg, a former inmate of Guantanamo Bay, where the Americans incarcerated terrorist suspects. That may, to some of you, feel a little bit sinister or a little bit strange, but does that mean that you nick eight people in their 80s? Neil Basu, former assistant commissioner at the Metropolitan Police until very recently, now co-hosts the Crime Agents podcast on Global. Be sure to listen to Crime Agents on Global. Neil Basu joins me now. Neil, overreach in your view? Morning.
Good morning, Nick. No, and you'd expect me, I've just heard the words of the Home Secretary and Matt Twist. I know them both very well. These are not people who are prone to overreach, in my view. The police had no choice. So I predicted last week on a different radio show that they'd either be too hard for the left and too soft for the right. But policing has one job to do, and that is to enforce the law of the land. I think Matt Twist put it brilliantly when he said, the law as it is, not the law as some people may wish it to be. That law was passed by a government based on intelligence. The intelligence is, I've been in those meetings, effectively the MI5 lead the intelligence picture for domestic threat against the UK. They'd be supported by my successors in counter-terrorism policing.
I'm not disputing for a second Palestine Action, Neil. I'm not. But an 89-year-old woman carrying a poster with the text, I oppose genocide, I support Palestine Action, arrested under terrorism laws. You're telling me that an 89-year-old woman with a poster is a potential terrorist, Neil?
No, I think those things make us all feel incredibly uncomfortable.
Well, why did they do it then?
Because they don't know the full facts, and I think that's what the Home Secretary was trying to say.
But that woman isn't helping spray paint on an RAF jet. She's just wanted to come out and have her freedom of speech in this country, Neil.
No, of course she isn't, but she is still committing an absolute offence, and the law is the law, and you would expect police officers to uphold that law. That law will then have to go through a two-code test with the Crown Prosecution Service, the Attorney General, before those people get even close to being charged and put before a court. And then the judiciary will take their effect, either judge and jury or a judge making an assessment of the law. That's the way things work in this country. We have a law. It's tested in the courts. And we'll see what the outcome of that is.
So finally, Neil, only for time reasons.
Your point is it an offence? Yeah. Yes, unfortunately it is.
Lastly, you've served as an assistant commissioner at the Met. Presumably there will take place later today some kind of review or action. What would happen after such a major operation such as that, Neil?
There's always a review about everything that went either well or everything that went badly. I've seen some reportage about excessive use of force, but I've not seen that in any of the broadsheets or on the radio. I think essentially the plan went exactly as...
No, I agree. I think you're right. And funnily enough, I was in the area, and your former colleagues were there in considerable numbers. Neil, thank you. Neil Basu, former Assistant Commissioner in the Metropolitan Police, co-hosts the Crime Agents podcast on Global. Be sure to listen to that. Is that really a terror offence? Katie McFadden, the senior associate solicitor at Hodge, Jones and Allen, acting for some of the protests, joins me now. Well, that's the case, if you will, for the prosecution. What would you say is the case for the defence, Katie, if I may call you that? Good morning.
Hi, good morning. The case for the defence is that this was a group of people who were willing to go out to risk arrest, to risk prosecution and to risk, yes, being deemed as terrorists in order to protect one of the most fundamental rights that we have, which is freedom of speech and freedom of expression. That is a key part of any democratic society and a key part of the rule of law.
Do you honestly think they're going to be put on charged?
Three people have already been charged for going out and taking part in similar actions on the 5th of July.
So, Katie, do you honestly think there's going to be 522 more cases?
It will be a decision for the Crown Prosecution Service about whether they believe it's in the public interest to prosecute, as you say, an 89-year-old woman for holding a sign that says, I oppose genocide, I support Palestine Action.
Lastly, how concerned are you that this, I think I said, could be police overreach? How much does that concern you as a legal professional, Katie?
I think the issue is actually not police overreach. The police were ordered to go out and do their job. Frankly, I've never seen quite so many police officers look so vastly uncomfortable with the decisions that they had been...
You were there, just to clarify.
I've been in the police stations throughout the protests.
I see.
So I've been dealing with these police officers.
Of course you have.
I have seen them look deeply uncomfortable, like they're arresting their granny.
Well, someone's granny was arrested. Two grannies were arrested. Katie McFadden, thank you. Your senior associate solicitor at Hodge, Jones and Allen, acting for some of those people, 14 after 7. Susan Thurrock, necessary by the police or an overreach? Good morning.
I, you know, the law is the law. We can't pick and choose which parts of the law we actually follow and which that we don't. If I take you back to the 2000s, the Iraq war, if that huge demonstration, if there'd been people there saying, I oppose the Iraq war, it's illegal, I support ISIS, they'd be arrested because they were prescribed...
Terror organisation.
You can't pick and choose whether they were 89 years old or not.
But do you honestly think that's a terror act for an 89-year-old woman? Do you seriously think that's a terror act?
It's a terror act because she's supporting a prescribed group.
Right. Now, simply by holding a poster.
Yes, because if somebody had been in Parliament Square saying, I oppose the Iraq war, I support ISIS... That you would don't be think, an act of terrorism.
Lastly, you don't think that's the sort of thing you hear of happening in Russia? 500 people arrested in Moscow yesterday for carrying posters opposing Russian involvement in Ukraine, and we'd all say, oh, that's awful, that's Putin's Russia. 500 people arrested in London for opposing the terrorist classification of terrorism for an organisation. 500. You don't think that we expect those sort of things in Moscow?
Right, first of all, in Moscow, it's not on the statute book that to say that the war in Ukraine is illegal. We've got a law on the statute book saying that Palestine Action is a prescribed terrorist organisation.
All right. Sue, you've got us started. Let's see what others make of what Sue says, also coming up after the news in a related story. Five Al Jazeera journalists have been killed in an Israeli airstrike on a hospital in Gaza.
He feared that he would be attacked. He had received warnings from some Israeli soldiers telling him to tone down his coverage, but he was adamant that he would continue to report.
Nicole Johnson, a Sky correspondent, worked alongside one of the journalists. She says Anas al-Sharif had been warned and worried this could happen. We'll have more on that. 16 minutes after 7, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
More foreign criminals are to be deported from the UK before their human rights appeals have been heard. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli airstrike near a hospital in Gaza. The drink drive limit could be cut, and older drivers face mandatory eye tests as part of a road safety push. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south, cloudy in the north, heavy showers developing in the west, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 is closed eastbound between junctions 13 at Cheveley and 12 at Theal. It's because of an ongoing investigation and there are queues of about 3 miles on the approach. Very busy on the M25 clockwise from the Clackett Lane services to junction 6 at Godstone, and that's because a car broke down earlier. And then also on the M25, there are delays anti-clockwise to junction 17 at Maple Cross following an accident. In St John's Wood, the A41 Finchley Road is closed northbound, and that's all down to a burst water main. In Crystal Palace, Central Hill is closed both ways, and that's all down to an accident. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central Line and also on the District Line.
This is LBC.
Here comes Steve, with the satisfied smile of a man who's checking out at midday after a great night's sleep and a delicious unlimited brekkie. See the untamable bedhead hair, and if you look really close, you can see that properly well-rested glow, which can only mean one thing. Last night, he slept at Premier Inn. Get better sleep for your money. Premier Inn. Rest easy. Breakfast subject to availability. T's and C's apply.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me.
You've got it. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Brands that use radio are 49% more likely to get noticed. Amplify your advertising at radiocentre.org, assuming you want to get noticed.
The holiday park industry is in the spotlight after thousands of holiday park homeowners lost what they...
You've heard it in the news.
Holiday park homeowners being hit with sudden site fee increases, fake resale promises, and dramatic losses in the value of their holiday homes. The Holiday Park Advice Centre could help you get compensation if you were missold. Contact the Holiday Park Advice Centre today. Text ASSIST to 78900. That's ASSIST to 78900.
A Thames Link train is a place where you can have more me time. A chance to skip traffic and glide to wherever you need to be. With headspace to focus on more important matters. Like if that cloud is a starfish or sunflower. Fast journeys without the rush with great deals at thameslinkrailway.com. Terms apply.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Arrested, effectively, for holding a sign. That's where we find ourselves after Saturday. We'll have more calls on that. David, you'll be the next caller. 20 minutes after 7. Wide range, as often is the case on a Monday, wide range of stories on the front pages. In no particular order, just the way they come. 26,000 prisoners freed early by Labour is the front page of the Daily Mail. Starmer hits £30 billion cost of Chagos surrender is the front page of the Daily Telegraph. Here's a story we're going to be looking at, in more detail. Drivers over 70 face eye tests every 3 years. That's the front page of the Times. The Sun has a tremendous story. Dinghy migrants get dinghy days out, and they've obviously had journalists doing work up and down the country. And these are for asylum seekers who arrive here. Various authorities would appear to be doing everything they possibly can. Richmond Council, free gym sessions and free gym and swimming sessions. If you're an asylum seeker here. Wandsworth Council, you'll get a half-price Lime e-bike. Birmingham Council, children can go and watch Aston Villa as long as they go with an adult for just £1. The child pays just £1. To Kingston, where you can get half-price badminton classes. And perhaps the most bizarre of all, Rotherham Council, where you can get discounted trips on dinghies on a lake. So having come into this country, then we're going to give them cut-price days out on dinghies. It sometimes baffles belief, really. On the LBC app, more details on a story we're going to give you in full detail. Indeed, we're speaking to a government minister about it later in the hour. UK expands deport now, appeal later, foreign criminals policy, 15 more countries, and I will list them for you, I assure you. And the Independence front page is a story we're going to talk about in considerable detail, which is this is their online front page, I should say. Five Al Jazeera journalists killed in that Israeli airstrike. We'll get more on that in a moment. But David's in Southwood, we've been hanging on for some time. David, how comfortable or otherwise are you with police action in London on the weekend? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I don't think it's a good look for UK PLC. We had a lot of tourists there. We had a blind man who was in a wheelchair, disabled clearly, and blind, being wheeled away by the police. But the point I want to make is, if Ed Cooper, if you want to apply the laws, needs to be consistent. On your show, she's happy for pensioners to be arrested. On your show, she refused to accept that Netanyahu would be arrested if he came to UK, even though the Home Office deals with all international arrest warrants.
Mm-hmm.
Where
does this leave the law, lastly?
Well, this terrorism act came into force, was drafted in the late 90s to deal with militant groups abroad like the IRA, mm-hmm. Al-Qaeda. It wasn't designed for this. So I think when the courts deal with it, they will have to look at the mischief the government, the lawyers at the time Parliament was trying to sort out. And clearly, I don't think it applies to these sort of situations.
David, thank you for your input. Let's just give you the breakdown. I think I told you the average of those average age is at 54. More than 100 were 70 or above. It's extraordinary. 263 men, 261 women, 8 people who either define themselves as non-binary or refuse to give their gender. One of whom, of course, included was Mohsen Beg, the former Guantanamo Bay detainee. Now, that may have a sinister edge for some of you, but anyone found guilty of supporting or gathering support for a proscribed organisation for 14 years in jail and a £5,000 fine. Isn't normally what you hear of events in, I don't know, countries such as Russia or North Korea. Does seem a bit sinister, doesn't it? We'll come back to that. More on a story that's broken overnight. 5 Al Jazeera journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near Gaza City's Al-Shifa Hospital. As Hani Mahmoud is a colleague of Anas Al-Sharif, one of the people who's lost their lives. He's been seen and has told Al Jazeera,
it's important to highlight this attack just a week after an Israeli military official directly accused Anas and directly ran a campaign of incitement on Al Jazeera and correspondents on the ground because of their work, because of their relentless reporting.
Let's get more detail now from Alan Fisher Ilan, who joins us from northern Israel. What more details have emerged overnight? Morning.
Hi, good morning. The Israeli army has issued a statement saying that he had been targeted as the head of a Hamas cell in Gaza. This is very unusual. I mean, there of course have been journalists killed in this nearly 2-year war, but not deliberately targeted like this.
And has that been confirmed, or is that an IDF assertion?
This is an IDF assertion, okay. that of his being head of a Hamas cell. I mean, Israel has in the past, Israel shut all of Al Jazeera's offices a couple of years ago near the start of the war, accusing Al Jazeera of involvement in terrorism. But of course it's a contentious allegation.
And we have that the airstrike was near the hospital. How close was it? Were they in a house, car? What do we know?
We know that they were in a tent right in front of the hospital.
Right.
That's what we know, yeah.
Okay, so is that the provision for sleeping arrangements? Is that you just sleep in a tent? Is that roughly what we think?
Probably.
That's roughly
probably.
What we got.
I mean, in many cases, this is what is done, yeah.
Okay, all right. Thank you for your input, Alan Fisher Ilan, freelance journalist joining us from northern Israel. So the names, and probably some of you may know these people, but the names we have so far are Anas al-Sharif. Now, he's the one that the IDF said has served as the head of a terror cell in Hamas, but also Mohammed Reiki, if I'm saying that correctly, cameraman Ibrahim Zahir, Mohammed Nufal, and Mohamed Ailwa. They've all, Al Jazeera reporting, and two others, as yet unidentified. So the total number of people killed was 7. If we get more details on that, obviously we'll bring them to you. It is a related conversation, isn't it? We come back to events here in this country, in London, on Saturday. People turning up. There was an attempt for mass arrests, and that is difficult. And anybody, in some instances, they're arrested for assaulting police officers. Well, of course I'm going to support those. Absolutely. But arrested for holding a banner. Jason in Marylebone. Jason, you're on the radio. What do you say? Good morning.
Good morning, sir. What do I say? Look, the police have lost control of our streets, in my opinion. I think that's clear. And I think that they're trying to stick their chest out by saying, look at us, look at the amount of arrests we've made. But if you look at it on the other side, the flip side, the people that were carrying the banners, it's a win for them as well, because they're only carrying these banners because they want to raise attention and they want to raise their profile. And by them being arrested, that's exactly what's happened.
Well, not if they get charged. But if they've got convicted, they might have a fine of £5,000, which I would find incredible, but
But what they should have done, Nick, in my opinion, the police, they should have given them the opportunity.
It's not the police, remember. It's they've been instructed by, they have to uphold the law. They don't make the law. So it's the Home Secretary who's decided that we now live in a country where you can be arrested for holding a sign.
Right. So the Home Secretary should have instructed the police to give the people the opportunity to give up the banners first. If they give the banner up, then nothing happens. If they don't give the banner up, then they potentially could get arrested.
So what happens? But it is ridiculous. What's happened to free speech then?
Well, but they're supporting a. We don't really have free speech, do we? Because you can't go and support a terrorist organisation. So how is it complete free speech?
And I think it's the level of support, isn't it, Jason? That's the key. Because if any of these people, and I find it very difficult to believe. What did I say? The average age was 53. More than 100 of them are 70 or above. We have two elderly women, both 89. Look, if they were involved in having cake sales to raise money for Palestine Action, absolutely, nick them. If they're involved, they just have concerns about freedom of speech, and that's what I have the worries for. Jason, thank you. Let's get on to some of the messages that are coming in on social media and texts. Albert in Croydon, it seems harsh to arrest these older demonstrators, but the law is the law. These people knew what would happen, so it's no good complaining after the event. I don't know that they are. I think in some instances they knew that they were going to be arrested. They're very brave to do it. Steve makes the point that hopefully I have got across. The law is made by the politicians. The police are simply there to enforce it. But we cannot decide which law we do or do not obey or choose to follow in this country. No, we can't. But I think we can, and we should, and we must question whether this has been overreach. Again, and I do think when I made that point to Sue, the first of the callers, 522 people arrested because they don't like a government policy. and they hold posters to that. That is what you expect to hear in Moscow or Beijing, isn't it? Not London. I say again, it's not like they were putting the planes out of commission. Tony, arresting middle-class liberals and calling them terrorists is overkill. Clearly over the top. Ian in Surbiton, many of those elderly demonstrators hoped and wanted and took action to get arrested. They want media to film them, they've got they wanted, and they're now crying crocodile tears. I don't know that they are. I really, I haven't heard them. Perhaps some of them are, but of the 522, I think many of them knew what they were doing. We'll continue with that conversation in other news, coming up after the latest headlines.
Hiring intentions among British businesses remained at a record low as they grapple with rising employment costs. I'm Kathleen Brooks from trading platform XTB, and I'll be telling you more later on the show.
Plus, I'm a foreign criminal. Get me out of here. More deportations. You'll hear more from the government minister later in this hour. And hotter than the Costas, warmer than Barbados, we'll give you a full weather roundup. 7.30, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
More offenders from overseas are to be deported before their appeals are heard. Ministers say the Deport Now, Appeal Later scheme will expand Britain's ability to reject spurious human rights claims. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near a hospital in Gaza City. The IDF says it was targeting a terrorist leader posing as a correspondent for the Qatari broadcaster. The drink drive limit in England and Wales could be cut to the same level as Scotland. Ministers are also looking at mandatory eye tests for the over 70s and tougher driving penalties as part of efforts to cut road deaths. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south, cloudy in the north, some heavy showers in the west, a high of 30 degrees.
This is LBC.
At EDF, we don't just encourage you to use less electricity. We actually reward you for it. That's why when you use less during peak times on weekdays, we give you free electricity on Sundays. How you use it is up to you. EDF. Change is in our power. Households who reduce their weekday peak electricity usage by 50% can earn up to 16 hours of free electricity per week. For full details, eligibility and T's and C's, visit edfenergy.com/r-power.
Your fan's doing its best. It's just not doing enough. And your old barbecue? Now just home to a family of spiders. That's why AO's got thousands of electricals to power your summer. Why we deliver next day, price match, and why we're the UK's most trusted electrical retailer. Shop now at AO.com. To verify, visit AO.com/trust. Delivery charges, geographical restrictions, and price match terms apply.
Introducing the Ford Capri. Rewired for the electric age. And now you could win one. Take a test drive in the new all-electric Capri to enter. And you could win the Icon Rewired. Search Win a Ford Capri. Go electric with Ford. To enter, book a test drive online by 31st August and complete by 30th September. T's and C's apply. 25 plus only. For details, see ford.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345-6060-973.
7.32, back to your reaction. Those mass arrests, the highest number before was believed to be 329. Those were the poll tax riots, I stress that word, back in 1990. Here we are, 522, not quite double, but getting on for double. And there was virtually no violence. This is people, in some instances, approaching their 90s. Comfortable with that? Into the world of finance, joined by Kathleen Brooks, who's financial analyst and research director at the trading platform XTB. And joins me now, Kathleen, why are fewer and fewer bosses in this country saying, you're hired? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. It's a real summer of discontent for both bosses and those looking for a job. It's because of rising employment costs. So the rise in the national insurance, there's a lot of uncertainty about what's coming in the budget and whether or not there'll be more taxes that will hit businesses. And also, you know, young people have actually been hit the hardest. Now, this is all in the private sector, and only 57% of private sector firms plan to recruit in the next 3 months. That's down from 65% last year. So it's a big decline. And that's according to the Chartered Institute of Personnel and Development. But other surveys are saying pretty much the same thing. So business leaders, they're really stuck in limbo. They want to see what the budget is going to say because they, you know, hiring someone is a big investment these days, and they want the gamble to pay off.
So just briefly, and lastly on this, Kathleen, what would they want to hear from the Chancellor then that would perhaps encourage them to rethink and to start hiring again?
Well, what they want is certainty. Ah. So we're hearing that there's these black holes and we're looking at, you know, potential tax rises. Well, businesses are probably the easiest ones to pick the pockets of compared to individuals. So it's basically saying there won't be any more rises in national insurance, but actually there won't be any more rises in taxes for a while. You can't keep increasing tax year on year because that's what leads to businesses stalling hiring, pay rises. You know, they're virtually non-existent at the moment in the UK, although the official data says something different. The survey data is saying that they really are stalling very, very quickly.
Let's move on. What's happening with Tesla? Expansion.
Well, they're not great at selling cars these days. But, you know, one company that is hiring is Tesla, actually, because they're looking to pivot to household electricity with Tesla Electric and Tesla Energy Ventures essentially tying up. So they've applied for a license from Ofgem and they could be in operation before the end of the year. But how it works is essentially it's directed at people that have Teslas and have these Powerwall charge points already installed in their house. Tesla will offer them a flat fee for charging your Tesla car, so you can charge at any time. Usually you have to charge at odd times to get good deals with other energy providers. But they're also going to pay people with these Powerwall batteries if they use them to power electricity elsewhere, so to other households, say on your street or in your area. So it's essentially using these Powerwall charge points as a virtual power plant. So it's very, very clever if you think about it.
Yeah. Yes, well, they are clever folk, undoubtedly. Why, in part, is Ryanair dropping the French connection?
Oh, yeah. Guess what? Michael O'Leary's fighting with another airport regulator.
Prefers a fight to a feast, that one, doesn't he?
It really is. So he is going to cease flying into three French airports, Bergerac, Brive and Strasbourg. I know a lot of people love flying to the Dordogne at this region at this time of year, so it's very sad for them. But the reason is the French government's decision to hike a solidarity tax. Well, Michael O'Leary is having none of this solidarity, and it's from over €2 to €7 per passenger. So he's saying that will hurt Ryanair profitability. He absolutely tore into the French government in an article at the weekend, blaming them for France's weak recovery since COVID, saying that they prefer taxes to growth. And he also called the recent air traffic control strikes essentially nonsense and that they were recreational. So instead, he's going to fly to Italy and other low-cost places around Europe to try and put pressure on the government.
Finally, let's go down to the Riverside. What's happening in the O2 arena?
Oh, yeah. So this is a Mark Blyman scoop on Sky. But the long-term lease, it's been sold from Trinity College, Cambridge, who were the owners, who knew they had it, to Rothesay, which is Britain's biggest pensions insurer, for £90 million. And, Nick, you might know Rothesay if you like cricket.
Yes, I've seen their brand on the latest test series against India, England.
Yeah, so they're no stranger to entertainment and sports venues. Both parties, they've confirmed it, and they'll formally announce it later this week. But it's good news, because it's London's largest entertainment venue.
Have you been there? Have you been to a gig?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, it's tremendous, isn't it?
It really, really is good. Yeah. But the lease is held separately, actually. The venue is operated by a different group, the Anschwitz Entertainment Group, and they are going to continue with that. So this just kind of secures it, essentially. They've got a 999-year lease.
Kathleen, thank you. Have yourself a good day. Kathleen Brooks is financial analyst, research director at the trading platform XTB. Let's come back to Andy in Basingstoke. 522 arrests in many instances for holding up a placard. Happy with that, Andy? Morning.
No, not happy with it at all, Nick, but I'm a bit more unhappy with you again, mate, I'm afraid.
Uh-oh, what have I done now?
Yeah, well, you know, you and me. basically, you're very unhappy about this, quite rightly so, but you were quite happy a year ago to have all the environmentalists thrown in jail just for blocking the road.
No, but that's an illegal act. You can't block the King's Highway.
Technically, so the people on the weekend were.
But are you happy with that?
I'm not happy with either.
Right.
I'm less happy with your attitude because hold on.
There is a world of difference from blocking a road, stopping people getting to their places of work, hospital appointments, getting married, whatever people choose to do on the weekend, and
peaceful
holding a poster.
Mate. Peaceful demonstration, though, wouldn't it?
Which? What, when you stop the road? No, that's not peaceful at all.
Yeah, peaceful. They weren't smashing into things and breaking people up.
Once you block the road, I think you're...
Do you like free speech or not? So people are going to protest?
I'm quite fond of it, yes. I'm quite fond of a bit of free speech when I can. When you think what I do for a living, I wouldn't have had a job for the last 20 years.
True, true.
All right, mate. I hear the point you make. Well done. You certainly landed one, but I still say there's a world of difference between what they were doing on Saturday and those who decide to try and shut down bridges or main roads. Andy, have yourself a safe day. You in Basingstoke, like the rest of the country, you better get ready for... With newspapers telling us that it's going to be hotter than Barbados, Claire Nazir, meteorologist and broadcaster, is here with more details. Morning, Claire.
Good morning, Nick. Yes, the fourth surge of heat extends across the UK through the next few days. Top temperature probably going to be 34 degrees Celsius. We've already seen in excess of 35 this summer, and that's going to happen on Tuesday. Now, everywhere we'll feel the warmth. We'll even see 26 across eastern Scotland through tomorrow. But the highest temperatures will always be across central and southeastern areas, and that's where it's going to feel oppressively hot with what we call tropical nights, where temperatures may not dip below 20 overnight, so bodies can't really recover from the heat through the day. There will be some thundery showers around as well, but certainly a hot week to come for many.
When does it finally cool down, or don't we know yet?
Well, currently, it looks like even into Friday, we're going to see that heat extending across most places. So 27 in the north of England on Friday, 29 across England in the south, across Scotland, probably the low 20s, which is very pleasant. So through into the weekend, the heat will slowly wane, but certainly hanging on to it for the longest across southern counties.
Grateful as ever, Claire. Claire, have yourself a good day. Claire Nazir, meteorologist and broadcaster. Jack, coming to you for your view. Let's just get some more in, though, on social media and on the text. Hamid Khalik says, Palestine action, I reckon, was prescribed after pressure from Israel. This shows we take our instructions from Tel Aviv. Well, I'll read it. I don't agree with it, but I'm happy to read it because that's what we have, free speech. Jonathan says, prescribing Palestine action before diluting public support was a daft move. And Sylvia Abraham in Maida Vale, you're getting this wrong. I'm Jewish and I oppose genocide. We'll have to see if this is actually happening. Palestine action are criminals, and supporting them is just rebelling against our government and not to support the Palestinians. Well, of course, you absolutely, any act that would see to help Palestine action, I would oppose, financial, whatever it might be, and certainly deciding to take aircraft out. But holding a poster? I don't know. Jackson Dagenham, what do you say, Jack? Good morning.
Hello, Nick. I think we're looking at this from the wrong end of the telescope. It's not a question about the arrests, because the arrests only lead on from the prescription of Palestine action. And I find it fascinating that the IRGC, the Iranian Revolutionary Corps, hasn't been prescribed, even though people, MPs have been asking for it, yet, on the twist of the dime, the Palestine action can be prescribed. I'll say one thing, which is in the public domain already.
Go on.
Lord Dannett, who works for or represents a military company in America, an arms company, put pressure on MPs.
How did he put pressure? You're referring to Richard Dannett, are you, former head of the British Army?
Yes.
That pressure?
Well, it was all laid out in the Guardian. You speak to people in the House of Lords.
Well, I haven't seen that article. Can you tell me what was it he did? That's why I'm asking, Jack, to get more detail.
Well obviously, I wasn't there in the room, so no. I can't tell you exactly what he did.
No, but what do you recall from the newspaper article? Sorry, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, exactly it. He's an advisor to the military arms company in America, who have used his position to influence other people in the House of Lords, who then influence. But the thing is,
Jack, we're discussing whether it was necessary for the... Well, let's back up. We're discussing whether it was necessary for Yvette Cooper to take the action she did, which then led to the police taking action they had to on Saturday. How does that play into that?
How that plays into it is a question of influence, Nick. Okay. We can't keep
because I did ask you three times. Member of the House of Lords urged ministers to crack down on Palestine action at the request of a US defence company. Richard Dannett, former head of the British Army, wrote privately to two separate Home Office ministers asking them to address the threat posed by the group. The activist caused extensive damage to a factory run by Teledyne, a US multinational that sells technology for military, aerospace and other applications. Lord Dannett is an advisor of the company. Right, that's what I needed to get out there, Jack. Now your view.
How is it?
No, hold on. No, the reason I did that, Jack, right is that, respectfully, you were making assertions that I had to absolutely nail down. That's why I did it, Jack. No other reason.
Yes, okay, yes, sir. But I have, please... I have to let you know that I wasn't in the room to know exactly how.
Now that we know, so what's your view? Tell me why you think that's pertinent to our conversation now.
That is pertinent to our yeah. view, because it's a matter of influence, who peddles influence to our ministers, yes? Mm-hmm. And clearly, Yvette Cooper has been influenced by the Israeli lobby to prescribe Palestine action. That is why we've ended up in a position where old ladies are being arrested for voicing their freedom of speech.
Okay, sir. Please don't think I was being difficult. I just needed to get the facts out there. Thank you very much, Jack, for making me aware. You've made all the listeners aware as well, and I'm grateful for your input. Please don't think I was talking over you, but when you start making assertions like that, I have to obviously protect LBC's licence and make sure we got it right. Jack, really appreciate your call. Have yourself a good day. Thank you. Staying with legal matters, the idea now that I'm a foreign criminal, get me out of here. Victims Minister Alex Davis-Jones spoke yesterday about the government's plans to deport foreign criminals immediately.
Once somebody has been convicted and sentenced, then they will be immediately deported, because it is wrong that the British taxpayer is paying for them in our prisons, and they are taking up space in our prisons that we need.
More from that minister after this. 7:45 LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
The government's announced new plans to step up the deportations of foreign criminals from the UK. The broadcaster Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike in Gaza. And ministers are looking at tougher driving penalties as part of a push to reduce road deaths. LBC weather. Dry, hot and sunny in the south. Cloudier in the north. Some showers in the west. A high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed eastbound between junctions 13 at Cheveley and 12 at Thiel. It's because of the ongoing investigation and there are queues of at least 3 miles on the approach. Also delays on the A2 westbound to the Ebbsfleet turnoff, and that's all down to an accident where the road is partially blocked. In St John's Wood, the A41 Finchley Road is closed northbound. That's because of a burst water main. And in Crystal Palace, Central Hills had to be closed both ways after an accident. On the Underground, there are minor delays on the Central Line. On London Overground, the Mild May Line is suspended between Gospel Oak and Stratford, and that's because of a fire next to the tracks.
This is LBC.
Train to Bedford with the crew for a music festival. Scenes!
Georgie, is this too much glitter?
Yep, lost them. Bored off to get drinks on my own. It's okay, find the flag with the DJ and cat. Oh, there they are. Back on the train, glitter gone, feet destroyed. Totally worth it. Oh, I can't wait to post this selfie of ours. Download the Thames Link Railway app to book tickets and save one third off group travel on off-peak journeys. Thames Link Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973 LBC.
Julie could part exchange her car. Or check out We Buy Any Car. She could be unsure if she got a good deal part exchanging. Or have cash in the bank with more bargaining power to get a bigger car for her five-a-side team. Totally played. Oh, total player. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
Are you ready to win big? Enter now at winplus.co.uk to win huge cash prizes and loads more. 18 plus, GB only, T's and C's apply.
When we're little, we don't overthink things. We're brave, confident, we laugh and ask questions.
And play.
And play. So why stop there? Just because we're adults, it shouldn't mean we stop trying new things. For me, starting a career in early years has meant not just a new job, but new skills, new friends.
Like me.
Yes, and a new sense of purpose. All that, and I can earn while I learn.
Yay, painting next.
Do something big. Work with small children. Search early years careers to find out more.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residents, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August, full T's and C's apply, see little.co.uk/spin.
Hello, I'm Vanessa Phelps.
Hi, I'm Saskia Joss.
And welcome to Help My Child's Anxious. Each week we're tackling the toughest challenges of raising children, offering you practical advice, a sense of humour and endless empathy. I'll be joined by my daughter Saskia, who just happens to be a qualified child therapist.
So whether you're struggling with your child's anxiety, coping with tricky teenagers, or just need to hear from someone who gets it, this is the place for you.
You can listen to Help My Child's Anxious on Global Player, download it from the App Store or go to globalplayer.com.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
7:49, just while we wait for the government minister, because we will be moving on to this interesting change in the law, which some of you might, of course, heard discussed yesterday, which is going to the swifter deportation of foreign-born criminals. We'll have more on that. We'll come back to the conversation of events on Saturday. 522 arrests. Now, as I said, this is far... 522 arrests specifically for Palestine Action Relief. There were other arrests for assault and others. Total number of arrests of 532, but it's the 522 that we're discussing. The highest number before that was 329 for the poll tax riots back in 1990. Now, what happens if anyone is charged? Well, if they're absolutely convicted or they're found guilty of supporting or gathering support for a proscribed organisation, you will face a maximum of 14 years in jail and a possible £5,000 fine. Being arrested is enough to stop someone travelling to the United States or to work in education. Now, I appreciate if you're a lady of 89, it's unlikely that you're going to work in education. And 100 of those 522 were over 70. The average age is 54. Doesn't that speak to the makeup of the people to a degree? David's in Helmsley. David, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. I've spoken to you before.
Yes, sir.
So it's a pleasure to talk to you again.
Right.
I was just watching the news, basically BBC News, and Alex Davis Jones.
I'm going to be speaking with the minister, hopefully in a few moments, yes.
Oh, good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Maybe you can pass on what I just think about what she just said on the telly.
Tell me how it left you feeling then, David.
I was really angry. I'm sorry, Nick. I mean, you can argue about whether you agree with the action of Palestine Action or the demonstration or which side you're on of the argument. But if you have pensioners demonstrating peacefully, holding up a sign in a demonstration, I don't think these human beings should be arrested and put in prison for years, potentially.
Well, we don't know that yet. None of them have been charged, but you're right. But they could face 14 years in jail.
If I say something in London, I could face the same penalty. I mean, and I'm a peaceful person. I'm not a violent person. If I'd be arrested by the police and be carried away by four or five police officers as if I was a violent criminal, I think that wouldn't go down very well with my girlfriend, I think, with my family.
I think you're right. Stay tuned. The minister is joining us. We'll see what we get from her. Thanks, David. Ben's in Church Stretton. Ben, you're on the radio. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning.
Yes, point you want to make.
I was listening about these old women that have been arrested. Now, I'm 88, and I'm sure I could do a lot of blooming damage to something, but surely these old women could pick up a spray tag and spray into a fighter jet engine or something.
Yeah, but they weren't. They weren't doing anything associated with that. They were merely protesting about free speech.
No, they were... What would Kennedy that? I said they could do that.
Well, they could. I mean, they could, if they had the means, fire off a nuclear weapon, but it's proportion that we're discussing, isn't it, Ben? You're angry, but I'm afraid, sir, I've got to say farewell because I have the government minister on the line. Give us more details of this increase in deportation. So, Ben, have yourself a safe day. And let's pick up on that story that we learnt from the news bulletins that criminals from almost two dozen countries will no longer be able to delay their deportation by appealing against the decision to remove them under changes. Let's get more on that now. From Labour MP, Victims Minister Alex Davis-Jones. Good to have you on, Minister. What exactly are you and your colleagues announcing today?
Good morning, Nick. So we are announcing an extension to the current eight countries of which you are able to deport first to and appeal later from. So we're trebling that to up to 23 countries. But in addition to that, we are also announcing that you will be deported immediately on sentencing if you are found to have committed a crime in our country with no right to ever return. Because being in this country is a privilege, and if you abuse that privilege, then you will be removed and you will never be allowed to return.
What level of crimes are we talking about?
So any crimes, if you commit a crime in this country, you will be removed. However, there will be some exemptions in order to protect the public and for national security. So, for example, if you are convicted of murder or if you are a terrorist or you are serving a life sentence, then you will be exempt from this in order to protect national security.
And what happens once you're deported?
You will be never, no right to ever return to the United Kingdom, and you are no longer a drain on the public purse.
Hang on, so... So I commit and I'm convicted of rape in this country, maybe child rape, and I'm convicted, and I get a one-way ticket back to Switzerland, where I come from.
You are returned to your country of origin, and it is up to the country of origin what they do with you then.
So then I go off and possibly commit rape in Switzerland?
It is the country of origin's responsibility for you as a foreign national criminal. I want to say, though, that currently the foreign criminals are always deported at 50% of their sentence, costing the taxpayer. You know, it costs £54,000 a year to house a criminal, to pay for their bed and board at His Majesty's pleasure in England and Wales. Mm. We think that's not fair. We think these foreign criminals should be deported immediately, not costing the taxpayer anything, and also have no right to ever return here to cause more harm to British citizens. This is what the public are telling us, and that is the action that we're carrying out.
And there'll be no recourse to appeal under the ECHR or any other means, Minister?
So individuals will have the ability to appeal, but as we've said today, they can now appeal from that country of origin, so they do not have to wait here in the United Kingdom in order to appeal. And we're also cracking down on some of the eligibility criteria from which they're able to appeal, because as we know, Nick, and as you have debated time and time again, certain articles under the ECHR are being abused, particularly Article 8, this right to a family life. There are spurious reasons being given, and we feel like it needs to be tightened up, so that is exactly what we're doing as well. So we're reviewing that to make sure that those who do have specific eligibility to retain are done so.
So no longer able to say that the person has a wife and children, whatever it might be, they're still off to Albania, Jamaica, Brazil, or wherever it might be.
Exactly. And they can appeal from that country. And if they do have a legitimate and right to appeal, then they will be able to appeal. However, if they are just giving spurious reasons and abusing the ECHR, then they will not be allowed to return.
All right. On the subject of deportations, Minister, I note that some videos have been released over the last few days showing people taking tent out of this country. This is something that I discussed in the past with the Home Secretary, with Dame Diana Johnson, and it was something that wasn't being done. Is this a change of policy now to show that when you can and when these people are being shipped out of the country, much as we see in the United States, there's video evidence of that, Minister?
Well, absolutely. So your listeners may have seen some of this footage over the past few days of the first illegal migrants coming over in small boats being detained in a processing centre, ready to be removed back to France as part of that new agreement that we've got with France. You know, the situation of small boat crossings is intolerable, and it needs to be tackled. And that is exactly what this government is doing. We're bringing forward practical, workable solutions rather than just gimmicks that the previous government was trumpeting in order to get to grips with this. And the returns agreement with France is just one of the ways in which we're doing this. Why I'm here today to announce the deportation of foreign criminals is another. And we outlined more in our immigration white paper earlier this year. But these are practical, workable and deliverable solutions which the public have quite rightly been calling for a long time.
On the subject of foreign criminals, how many are there in British jails, Minister?
So currently around 10,000 foreign criminals in our jails in England.
All of whom
Wales.
Would now be liable for deportation under the new scheme?
So, as I've said, all foreign criminals are eligible to be deported. However, this will be looked at on a case-by-case basis for the reasons I've already outlined. For example, if you're a murderer or serving a life sentence, yes, or if you're a terrorist, then it is right that you remain in prison here for the public safety and for national safety.
And the number of countries now, then, this will apply to is... Oh, are we into 30-something now, Minister?
23 now, 23, and we are reviewing to see if we can go further again.
OK. Can we talk a little bit about events in London on the weekend? How concerned are you that there were 522 arrests, in some instances, people nearly 90 years of age, Minister?
Well, first and foremost, Nick, I want to thank the police for their bravery and their courage
in arresting 89-year-old women.
Well, for arresting those who were carrying out illegal activity in support of a proscribed terrorist organisation. Let's be real here, Nick. The right to peacefully protest in our country is a cornerstone of democracy, and there are thousands of people quite rightly showing outrage for what is happening in Gaza. The scenes are intolerable. However, they are doing so peacefully, and Palestine Action are a prescribed terrorist organisation.
But what were the people doing on the weekend, Minister? They were peaceful.
They were showing support for a prescribed terrorist organisation, an organisation which is not peaceful, Nick. They have carried out violent acts of criminal damage.
These people were peaceful.
And under the law, they are showing support for a prescribed terrorist organisation, and no one is above the law, Nick. Now, I think it's important to note that Palestine Action have carried out violent criminal acts of damage against RAF aircraft. We've got credible reports of them targeting Jewish-owned businesses in the United Kingdom, and there are also reasons for which we cannot disclose because of national security. However, they have been prescribed as a terrorist organisation in the United Kingdom, and anyone showing support for that terrorist organisation will feel the full force of the law. So I would urge those individuals... Why is it
a terrorist act to hold a sign, Minister?
Well, they are showing support for a terrorist organisation, Nick. And that is quite clear within the law that it is not allowed and is not admissible. And I would just say to these individuals, however noble you think the cause may be, wanting to show support for Gaza, please note that this government has prescribed Palestine Action for genuine reasons here. We haven't just done so, off the back of a fag packet. We have done so because they have carried out violent criminal acts. These are not a peaceful organisation. And anyone showing support for that organisation will, as I've said, feel the full force of the law.
You think that all 522 should go before the courts then, lastly?
I feel like if the police have taken action to arrest these individuals because they were showing support for a terrorist organisation, then the law is quite clear.
So they should be prosecuted.
Well, if they have broken the law, and if it has been found that they've broken the law, then action should be taken.
Lastly, isn't this the sort of thing that happens in Moscow, not London?
This is showing support for...
People opposing a government line. No, 522 peaceful people arrested. That's what you read in Moscow, isn't it, Minister?
As I've stated, Nick, there are thousands and thousands of people showing support for Gaza and for the Palestinians, and also showing support yesterday for the hostages to be released and returned home, the 50 remaining hostages that are still alive in Gaza. There were 500 people arrested because they were showing support for a terrorist organisation. And that is currently the law in this country, that we do not support terrorists.
I'm grateful for your time. Thank you. And for giving us more detail, foreign criminals will be deported before any appeal. The number of countries they're growing as outlined by Victims Minister Alex Davis-Jones. Thank you for your time, Minister. You've taken the story at 8 o'clock. LBC News is next.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 8 o'clock, the law could be changed to stop human rights rules being used as loopholes to allow criminals to avoid deportation. The Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, is looking at narrowing down the criteria used by judges. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has the exclusive story.
Yvette Cooper revealed back in March that the Home Office was looking at so-called loopholes in the law. She said that was allowing criminals to avoid being deported. And it comes after a number of high-profile cases where lower tribunal judges had said people could stay in the UK, including one case of a man whose son did not like foreign chicken nuggets. LBC understands that she is now looking to change the law to more tightly define the exceptional circumstances that can be used for some criminals to try to stay in the UK.
Ministers are also expanding a scheme to deport foreign criminals before their human rights appeals. Offenders from another 15 countries will be sent home first, then take part in any hearings by video link from abroad. The broadcaster Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near a hospital in Gaza City. The IDF says it was targeting reporter Anas al-Sharif, accusing him of being a Hamas leader posing as a correspondent. The Committee to Protect Journalists says Israel has failed to provide evidence for the claim. Sky News International correspondent Diana Magnate, who is in Jerusalem, says it's caused outrage.
That this has massive ramifications really across this part of the world where a lot of people would watch Anas. He had a massive social media following. He was prolific on Instagram, on X. He was in the north of the strip in Gaza City for a long time at the beginning of the war, for a year when very few other journalists were there.
A push to reduce road deaths could see the introduction of mandatory eye tests for older drivers. Ministers are also looking at bringing England and Wales' drink drive limit into line with the lower level in Scotland. A new new road safety strategy is to be published later in the year. Firefighters have worked through the night tackling a gorse fire on Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh. Emergency services were called to the scene at about 4 o'clock yesterday afternoon. And a yellow heat health alert will come into force across parts of England from midday. Strong sunshine and high temperatures are expected to put pressure on health and care services. In the city, the FTSE 100's reopening at 19.95. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south. Cloudier in the north with heavy showers in the west. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet. Ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you. Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
Good morning, 4 minutes after eight on Monday, August the 11th. Laws changing then regarding the deportation of foreign criminals, and also the Home Secretary looking at other aspects. We'll bring you a full report on that. Now, another story you just heard on the LBC News Bulletin, the idea that people, if you're in your 70s, you're going to have regularitis if you want to carry on driving. What did Anne Flanagan, she's 72, say of this?
We often hear about younger drivers, but each of us who gets behind the wheel, including older and experienced drivers like myself, each of us has a responsibility to make our roads safer.
As we get ready, of course, for A-level results this week, GCSEs the week after, what of the report that says that white working class pupils are effectively being written off? Yes, we do seem to have heard this before. So what is being done about it? How's it going down on the farm for the US Veep?
JD Vance's 19-vehicle motorcade has arrived in the Cotswolds, but what sort of reception has the US Vice President been getting? I'm LBC's Henry Riley in Chipping Norton.
Plus, a brilliant television executive who created one of the mainstays of British television. Creator of Blue Peter has died. We'll have an appreciation of an astonishing career.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
Let's get more meat on the bones of that LBC exclusive you heard mentioned in the news bulletin. Yvette Cooper believes to want to change the law to stop criminals using human rights rules as loopholes to avoid deportation. This comes, of course, as the government announces in a conversation I've just had with the relevant minister, foreign criminals, more foreign criminals will be deported without an appeal. The appeal will take place from their native country, as it were. Here with all the details, LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark.
Morning, Nick. Yes, morning. So two developments from the government, as you just said, on the migration front. And it comes after days and, in fact, weeks of more small boat crossings on the Channel. And, of course, we know that summer is when the numbers go up and up and up. So the government wants at least us to think that they are cracking down on that. So, firstly, I can exclusively reveal to you that Yvette Cooper wants to change the law to stop criminals from using human rights rules, as she says, loopholes to avoid deportation. She launched a review earlier this year after a string of quite controversial cases from tribunals came to light. One of those was an Albanian criminal who judges said was allowed to stay in the UK, partly because it was claimed his son would not eat foreign chicken nuggets. This was, of course, later overturned by higher courts. Here is the Home Secretary earlier this year launching that review.
Well, we continue to support international law. That is really important, and it's because we support international law that we've managed to get new agreements with France and Germany. There have been some cases that do raise some real significant concerns, and that is also about the way in which the immigration asylum system operates. It's about the application, including of Article 8, as the Prime Minister has said. So we are reviewing all of this area to make sure that really the immigration asylum system works effectively in the way that Parliament meant it to, and make sure that there is a sort of proper sense of control in the system.
So I'm told that now the Home Secretary feels that there is no choice, but she has to change the law to try and tighten these loopholes to more tightly define what the exceptions are to those human rights laws and who can actually use Article 8 to try to avoid being sent back home. Now, I'm told that work is being done, is being ongoing at the moment, to look at putting a list of so-called exceptional cases on the statute book to clearly set that out. This review is also looking at Article 3. It protects against degrading treatment or torture. I'm also told that that's expected to try and increase the burden of proof on the claimants to be able to show that they would face this if they went back to their home country. I spoke to one expert, Barrister Alexander Horne, who told me there were potentially thousands of cases of this happening. Now, second, as you've been speaking to the Minister about this morning, Nick, the government are announcing that more foreign criminals are going to be deported from the UK before their appeals have even been heard. So an extra 15 nations, including Australia and India, added to that government scheme. So any appeals will be heard over video link from their home country instead. Ministers are coining it a deport now, appeal later scheme. You heard earlier from Alex Davis-Jones, the Victims Minister.
We are also announcing that you will be deported immediately on sentencing if you are found to have committed a crime in our country with no right to ever return, because being in this country is a privilege, and if you abuse that privilege, then you will be removed and you will never be allowed to return.
So already, Nick, they are eligible for deportation if they've been sentenced to more than 12 months in jail, unless there are compelling circumstances that they can use to stay. Labour have already deported 5,000 foreign criminals in the last year. But the Home Secretary says that they have been exploiting our immigration system by remaining in the UK for months or even years to come. And that barrister that I spoke to, Alexander Horne, suggested that this should be done straight away from when people are sent to prison. And we know, of course, the prison system is already under strain, Nick. Justice Secretary Shabana Mahmood says this could save £54,000 a year per prison spot. And figures from the MOJ have suggested there are around 700 prisoners from those 15 new countries that will now be covered by this deport now, appeal later policy.
Natasha Clark, LBC's political editor, reporting. Just before we get expert comment, let me list the countries. It does seem fairly important. They are Finland, Nigeria, Estonia, Albania, Belize, Mauritius, Tanzania and Kosovo. The new countries to be added are Angola, Australia, Botswana, Brunei, Bulgaria, Canada, Guyana, India, Indonesia, Kenya, Latvia, Lebanon, Malaysia, Uganda and Zambia. Alex Chalk is a KC and served as Justice Secretary until fairly recently, and was a former Conservative MP. I note your comments in one of the newspapers this morning. You're not sold on this, are you, Mr. Chalk? Good morning.
Well, I'm not, and I should just say at the outset that, look, being Lord Chancellor is extremely difficult, and I actually think the incumbent is doing a lot of the important, sensible things that are required. However, there is a real problem with this policy, and that's this. I think a lot of your listeners listening to this might say, well, that's great. You know, if someone's being convicted and they're kicked straight out, that's fantastic. But what's not coming across from what the minister just said before, deported immediately on sentencing, is this. This would mean that the individual would serve no punishment at all. So, for example...
Well, I put that to her, and she said it would be for that country then to make sure that she did.
Aha, but they won't. And that's the critically important point. So if someone were convicted of rape, for example, 10 years, and supposing it was a joint enterprise in the language of criminal law with a Brit, the Brit would serve the sentence, but the Albanians say, and I only mentioned it because it's the largest prisoner cohort, etc., etc., they would go straight back, and there is no prisoner transfer agreement, which means the individual serving their sentence with a large number of countries. There isn't one with Somalia, there isn't one with a whole number of countries. And so there is only a PTA for 200 offenders in Albania. That means there are 1,100 who would be released immediately, and to add insult to injury, they get about £1,500 from the British taxpayer, and their sentence is completely cancelled. And you know, even if they were to come sneak back into the UK, you couldn't suddenly say, oh, well, yeah, about that rape conviction. It's completely cancelled. It's gone away. And so my concern is for that victim of rape, she sits there and goes, hang on a second. I've come to court. I've given evidence. I've relived the trauma of all this. And he gets off scot-free. And that's what I think is ultimately unjust.
Well, I think the minister would say you've assumed that he gets off scot-free. It would be the court in Tehran. But you would rather spend... And your example of rape is obviously a very vivid one. Fortunately, mercifully, we're not all speaking about rape. We are speaking about other crimes. You would rather spend £1,000 a week keeping these people in the
country. Well, here's the interesting thing. We're not just talking about rape, but we're talking about conspiracy to import firearms. We're talking about organised crime, aggravated burglary, knife point robberies, etc., child cruelty, stalking, you know, huge numbers of serious...
But you'd rather keep all those people here costing each of us £1,000 a week.
The point is, there have to be consequences if you come to commit a crime in Britain. Because otherwise, just think about this for a moment. If there aren't, if someone is sitting there abroad and they think, well, do you know what? I'm thinking about going to a European country and I want to get involved in an organized crime shoplifting gang or indeed a violent crime gang, for example. Where am I going to go? Am I going to go to a country where I actually get some punishment? Or why don't I go to Britain, where the worst that's going to happen to me, I will get an all-expenses one-way ticket home plus 1,500 quid in my pocket. And that is the concern, that what sounds like a tough-on-crime measure could in fact be a magnet for foreign national offenders because they know there will be no punishment at all.
Before I let you go, and you put your case very eloquently, calls are already coming in. Having served as a prisons and probation minister, solicitor general and indeed defence minister, are you relaxed or otherwise with 522 arrests in London on Saturday for people holding banners?
Well, look, the reality is it is an offence to support Palestine Action. The question will be whether, in fact, the system can deal with that number of people. I suspect it can. But if it's a crime, the crime of the land should be upheld. The law should be upheld. That's what the rule of law is about.
So it is a crime to hold a banner, Mr. Chalk?
Well, look, it's to express support. That's what Parliament has said. And so it's the job of law.
And you're comfortable with that?
Hold the rule of law. Huh? Say again?
Are you comfortable with that, lastly? Do you not think this is overreach by the Home Secretary?
No, I don't think it's overreach. No, okay. I'd say I don't, because I think this came into force at a time when, of course, when British aircraft were being destroyed and in the name of Palestine Action, I think the Home Secretary, frankly, had to respond.
Always enjoy speaking with you. Thanks very much for your time. Alex Chalk is a KC, former Justice Secretary. Give us your views on that. Let's come back to the deportation aspect of our conversation. Jacqueline McKenzie, Head of Immigration and Asylum Law at the firm Lee Day, joins me now. Well, you're an expert in this field. I've heard the political side. Let's get the legal input. Where are you on this? Good morning.
Good morning. Well, the starting point for me is that countries have every right to deport people. I come across cases where people have only been in the country, you know, for a very short period, commit a crime. And absolutely, a country has a right to keep its nation safe. I mean, that's the starting point. But deportation is a very emotive subject, because I also come across cases of people who were deported because of driving offences or, and people who have been either born in this country or have been here, for a very, very long time. Mm. And of course, we hear those cases about, a child not wanting to eat chicken nuggets in Albania. Yeah. And many years ago, there was the case of the chap with the cat, wasn't it?
Yes.
And that's never the full story. I mean, you journalists like to pick up.
I know. It's all our fault, Jacqueline. Come on. If it's not the journalists, it's the lawyers.
But in the case of the man with the cat, he had a family, his partner was sick. But it was the cat that got the country's imagination. But on this, we don't know the details yet. We don't exactly know how this is going to work. Of course, there are schemes already. We've got the facilitated returner scheme, which is the one that attracts, the payment of £1,500. Mm. And then we've got an early release scheme. So people can already go quite early on, and they don't. So I don't know what additional powers there are going to be to make this new scheme work. And that's what we're waiting to hear.
Lastly, Jacqueline, as an expert, if I may call you, as an expert in the field, as and when this starts to rumble, what will you be nervous about? What will you and your colleagues at Lee Day be looking for so there's no abuse?
Will we be looking to see how they're going to treat Article 8? And I just heard Article 3 being mentioned by your correspondent there. Mm. And Article 3 is a very, very high threshold of, protecting people who are going to be subject to inhumane or degrading treatment. And it's usually people who are very, very ill and can show that they can't avail themselves of facilities in their country to keep alive. And how on earth are we going to be able to deal with that unless we're going to come out of the European Convention of Human Rights? So we'll be looking very closely as to what exactly does the government mean.
Jacqueline, I will end it there. Thank you very much for your time. Jacqueline McKenzie, your Head of Immigration and Asylum Law at the firm Lee Day. Calls coming in already on that. Brett, you'll be the first caller. Plus, we're off to the Cotswolds, of course, the scene of Clarkson's Farm. The welcome for the US Veep. J.D. Vance. 8:16, LBC News headlines, Thomas Watts.
A government minister has told Nick that new deportation rules will ensure foreign criminals are no longer a drain on the public purse. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near a hospital in Gaza. A push to reduce road deaths could see the introduction of mandatory eye tests for older drivers. LBC weather, hot sunshine in the south, cloudy in the north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed eastbound between junctions 13 at Cheverly and 12 at Thiel. It's all down to an ongoing investigation and there are delays of at least 3 miles on the approach. And also on the A2, there are westbound queues to the Ebb Street turnoff, and that's all down to an accident. So many problems on the trains this morning. Firstly, southeastern can't run between Hayes and Lewisham. Thames Link are suspended between Gillingham and Rainham. And on London Overground, the Mard May line isn't running between Gospel Oak and Stratford, and the Lioness line is suspended between Watford Junction and Willesden Junction. And that's all down to an investigation, which also means that the Bakerloo line is suspended between Harrow and Wealdstone and Stonebridge Park.
This is LBC.
Pay attention. The ferry leaves at 10 a.m. Roads are busy.
Great.
Dad, pack the boot. Suitcases, Tetris style.
Yeah.
Rosie, got your teddy?
Uh-huh.
No going back this time. Honey, how's the car?
Windows clean, car wax, carpets...
I meant the tyres.
Oh, sorted them at Quick Fit last week.
Brilliant. If things go to plan, it'll be smooth sailing.
Planning the perfect getaway this summer? Make sure your tyres are up for the job. Book today at quickfit.com or your local centre. Quick Fit. Drive away happy every time.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. LBC.
I'm telling you, raise taxes, that's how.
Cut spending, less waste, more sense.
Move north, get more for your money.
Until winter hits your heating bill.
Fair.
But 9.13% fixed annual return with Cufflink. We all agree that's strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hard to ignore.
Cufflink. Auto-invest property-backed from £500. Hard not to agree. Visit cufflink.com. That's Cufflink. Your capital is at risk. Tax rules apply to auto-invest and may be subject to change. Cufflink is authorised and regulated by the FCA. Visit cufflink.com for full T's and C's.
Who's a good human?
Jenny is, because Jenny will always do what's best for Bertie, her bestie Bassett. So if Bertie needs to go and wee, that's what they're gonna do. Even if it is 3 a.m. and it's raining cat lots. That's why she also chooses Butternut Box for Bertie's meals. Freshly prepared, served straight from the fridge, and conveniently delivered right to your door. At a time that suits you for once. Hey, Jenny.
Oh.
Ready to join thousands of good humans? Go to butternutbox.com to fetch 25% off your first box with code GOODHUMAN.
As a small business owner, you've got to be ready for the ups and the downs. Ready to think on your feet, ready to be rushed off your feet, ready to make the big decisions and make the tea. Two sugars in mind? Tough. Ready to be there for your customers whenever they need you? Well, ditto. Virgin Media Broadband's ready for anything business can throw at it. Yeah, it's business-ready broadband. Search Virgin Media Business Broadband.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
It's 20 minutes after 8. Brett, I said you'd got through first. You're in Standen. Let's get your view on the deportations. Good news or bad news? I see the argument the former senior Conservative is making there. Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think if there's an agreement with that country that they're being returned to, that they'll maybe have that same sentence, or they'll go and be detained in prison until sentencing, then fine. But I think, as you said before, someone could commit a really bad crime, then go straight back to the country and be set free again. And knowing how we operate at the moment, they'll probably make their way back across again and then get a dinghy back over.
Well, I mean, obviously you can't stop that. Their passports or their data, their identity will be stamped for never for re-entry. But as you rightly say, by the very nature of coming across on a dinghy, we wouldn't know.
But they don't have that, and exactly, they don't, because they check their passports before they come back over, don't they? So, the other thing is interesting, that list of names that were read out,
yeah,
it doesn't seem to be a lot of the countries on there that people probably would be wanting on there at the moment.
There's seen a list of countries that were... I mean, I was astonished to see Finland. How many Finnish criminals are there?
Yeah, this is what I mean. They're not countries you would deem as being... the higher risk countries, I would probably say, looking at those. So,
you'd have thought. I mean, I'm going to tread carefully because I'm surprised Iran's not in there. Iraq,
I know.
Afghanistan, Syria,
all those countries, Ethiopia, all of those.
But don't worry, we will go after Finland and Australia.
Yeah, exactly.
It's Mauritius.
It's another. The thing is, unfortunately, I think at the moment the government are looking for any angle that they can try and appease the public but they're not clued up enough, unfortunately.
No,
Brett, I will leave it there. The line's a bit clicky. So thank you very much for getting us started. More calls coming on this. Let me do some of the emails and social media on this. Gordon says they know they cannot deport these criminals. They've no documentation where they came from or agreement to send them back. It is just propaganda. Same subject. This comes in from Andy. Sending foreign criminals back to their country when they do a crime in Britain is not good enough on its own. Can we not take a hand or leg off? Thank you very much. I wish I hadn't even started that. It's nonsensical. James says, finally, a sensible politician who can look at things objectively, agree with the other side, recognise when they're doing things right, and across a sensible argument for things that they think should be changed. We need more of those sort of interviews and people in politics. That's referring to Alex Chalk, who has got support for those 522 arrests. In some instances, we're holding up a banner. I still think that's a bit of a stretch, but he knows far better than I. He did serve as Solicitor General. We'll come back to our idea of deportations in a moment. But we are heading towards the middle of August, so many of you might be about to go off on... For an American Veep vice president, they've decided to go to the Cotswolds. But what welcome is there for them? LBC's Henry Riley joins me now from Chipping Norton in the Cotswolds. Good morning, Henry.
Good morning, Nick. JD Vance arrived in the UK on Friday. As you mentioned, it's been billed as a family holiday, but the US vice president has already been joshing, fishing and holding meetings alongside our foreign secretary, David Lammy, at Chevening.
This is a very special relationship between our two countries, and I think me being here is just another part of that. So we've already, in the brief time that we've been here, my kids have fallen asleep on your floor. We've gone fishing in the lake outside, and unfortunately, the one strain on the special relationship is that all of my kids caught a fish, but the foreign secretary did not. I'm sorry.
After a stop-off for a private tour of Hampton Court Palace, J.D. Vance's 19-vehicle motorcade arrived here in the Cotswolds yesterday. And might the Vice President find time for a meeting with another politician whilst he's here? This was your conversation with Nigel Farage just over a week ago.
The Vice President, J.D. Vance, is coming through the UK. Will you be catching up with him, Mr. Farage?
We'll have to see.
I take that as a yes.
We'll have to see.
You're going to the Cotswolds?
We'll have to see.
Will you go to Jeremy Clarkson's pub?
Without a doubt.
For Vance now, it's downtime in Dean with his wife Usha and three children, just a stone's throw from the Diddley Squats farm shop. And it sounds like a compelling next episode for Clarkson's farm, but probably unlikely, given that Jeremy Clarkson recently described the US vice president as a bearded godbotherer with no clue about history. Now, the Vance family are staying at an 18th century Grade 2 listed manor house. The owners recently apologized to locals for the circus of the visit. But the US vice president is alongside the Chipping Norton set in the Hamptons of the UK. His neighbours are David and Samantha Cameron. The Beckhams are nearby. So too is Ellen DeGeneres, who moved to the UK to escape MAGA. Indeed, last month, Kamala Harris was actually here in the Cotswolds for a wedding. But these people in Chipping Norton yesterday gave me their take.
I hope he doesn't get a welcome at all. You know, what he did to President Zelensky was the most awful thing I've ever seen, and he's a bully, and he's not welcome as far as I'm concerned.
We see J.D. Vance is here, the U.S. Vice President.
Nobody tells me anything.
No, but he's here. The U.S. Vice President's in Chipping Norton at the moment.
Oh, right.
What sort of welcome do you think he'll get?
Not the foggiest idea, honestly. I don't have any idea.
I think he'll be quite anonymous because there are a number of people who are quite famous here and it's just like...
He'll blend in. I mean, do you think broadly he's sort of popular around here or...?
I can only speak for myself and no, not really.
We know all the neighbours and occasionally we'll, you know, bang into Caleb Cooper sometimes in Sainsbury's and I see Gerald around and...
Well, apparently Gerald drinks there in the Chequers.
He absolutely does. And sometimes Jeremy Clarkson does as well when he does the auctions, the Lido.
J.D. Vance. Oh.
Generally, we like to welcome everybody to Chipping Norton, but no, I'd absolutely kick him in the shins.
If he wants to come visit the Cotswolds, he's very welcome. And go and have a nice time in Dean Manor.
What would you recommend he does?
Well, he's not going to have much opportunity to do anything because he's going to be kept in a very tight security. He ought to go for a walk in the countryside because it's a great place to do that. And if he wants to go and sit in a pub, I'm sure he'll be very welcome and filmed by everybody. Any protests will have been imported and won't be based on people in Chipping Norton or even the local Cotswolds.
Now, the visit is dominating local online forums, WhatsApp messages. The narrow lanes and footpaths of the sleepy hamlet of Dean are patrolled by both uniformed and non-uniformed officers with sniffer dogs. The area, Nick, effectively is in lockdown. For some, over the next few days, they'll do diddly squat. It'll be an excuse for a night in, but for others, there are protests planned for tomorrow.
First class report. You failed on just one. Getting to Gerald. We needed to hear. Now, for those of you who don't watch Clarkson's Farm, Gerald has a wonderful local accent that is sometimes quite difficult to make out what he's saying. And on the television show Clarkson's Farm, they actually subtitle him when he speaks. But you couldn't. It was a great report, sport, but you couldn't find Gerald.
Well, do you know what, though? I did have a wonderful evening in his favourite local pub, but sadly he didn't pop in. I was waiting with bated breath.
Henry Riley reporting. That line, we're normally very welcoming here, but I'd want to kick him in the shins. That was a belter, wasn't it? Henry, let us know if anything helps. That motorcade, imagine trying to live there. Let's come back to the conversation. That lifted the mood a bit, didn't it? Come back to the conversation we're having about deportations. Now, as the government has announced today, the number of countries will be expanded. The idea is, upon conviction, you are out of here. They're calling it a deport now, appeal later initiative. Foreign citizens from countries, I won't list them all again unless you ask them, but they, the one newspaper cites India, Kenya and Uganda for whatever reasons. They will be deported and have to take part in any hearing related to their appeal remotely using video links with the UK. Deals with 23 countries. Ministers, the government says the change will prevent foreign criminals from gaming the system to delay their deportation. Jacob's in Guildford. In support of it, Jacob. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick.
Are you in support, sir?
Actually, I was until I've heard the various arguments this morning, and I'm thinking maybe it's not such a good idea.
Yes, tell me why.
And really, well, if we're doing this for financial reasons, one of the questions would be, if we sent foreign criminals straight home, what would stop them doing the same to us?
I know.
And how much money would we save, and how many Brits are in prison overseas? I don't know. But it made me think.
Well, that's the horror, isn't it? That you have someone who's involved in a let's use rape. I mean, they're not all, by the way. We need to say there are other crimes. But yes, you have someone who is perhaps a rapist who's going to, let's just pick one of these countries at random. Here we go. Malaysia. So we have a Malaysian rapist. We send him back to Kuala Lumpur. And if Malaysia decides not to prosecute him, he's got away with it.
Exactly.
The alternative is we spend £1,000 a week keeping him in jail, and there are 10,772 foreign criminals in our jails at the moment. Not all rapists, I hasten to add, but that is a heck of a saving we could be making, isn't it?
As long as we don't get criminals coming back from overseas that we would then put in prison, but yes, potentially it is, but the more you hear, the more I think, is it actually right that these criminals go free?
It's cash versus scruples, Jacob. You've absolutely nailed it, so thank you for your input. And that's what it comes down to. Hard cash, saving more than £1,000 a week. But someone involved in drug trafficking, gun running, goes back to, let's pick another country at random, goes back to Canada or Finland? I mean, how many Finnish criminals are there? Goes back to Helsinki and they do zero. Or diddly squat. We'll come to more of your views on that. Coming up after the news, the troubling report, and we've heard this so many times, haven't we? White working class pupils are being written off in our education system, so says the education secretary. Well, if anyone can fix it, respectfully, it should be her, shouldn't it? And then later in this hour, the TV legend who created Blue Peter, Biddy Baxter, will have an appreciation extraordinary career. Just turned 8:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari, on LBC. The news is with Thomas Watts.
Ministers could change the law to stop human rights rules being used as loopholes to block criminals' deportation. It's part of a wider push for foreign offenders to be removed from the UK as soon as they're convicted. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists, including a prominent correspondent, have been killed in an Israeli strike in Gaza. The IDF has confirmed it targeted Anas al-Sharif, accusing him of being the head of a terror cell. Ministers are considering tougher driving rules as part of a push to reduce road deaths. The drink driver limit could come down and over 70s could be required to undergo eyesight tests. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south, cloudy in the north, a high of 30 degrees.
This is LBC.
So, close your eyes, picture the scene. Just you and me, alone, enjoying breakfast on our own little island. Sounds perfect, right?
Yeah.
Great, because I've booked Wix to design our new kitchen.
At Wix, we have over 70 kitchen styles to choose from, with prices from under £3,000 to over £20,000. And with our spend and save offer, there's up to 50% off kitchen units. Book a free design appointment and feel as proud as a peacock with Wix. Terms and minimum spend apply.
Have you heard?
About what?
About Boots Optician's ultimate eye test with OptiMap scan.
Why are you whispering?
I think it's for VIPs. It's an in-depth look into your eye that can detect health conditions that other eye scans might miss.
You know, the whole family's already had one done. You should too.
Okay, I'll book one now.
Why are you still whispering?
Don't know. Can't seem to stop.
Ask about OptiMap when you book an eye test at Boots Opticians and see what's possible. OptiMap available in selected stores. Additional charges apply.
Looking for a fixed passive income backed by real demand? With ulezprosperity.com, you buy the car, we rent it from you for a set period. You stay the legal owner and we pay you up to £600 per month in fixed rental income. No hassle, no maintenance, no tenants. It's a straightforward asset-backed rental agreement. Visit ulezprosperity.com for conditions and to learn more. That's ulezprosperity.com. Simple, steady, secure.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
8:33. I'll be talking to you about deportations, John, in just a moment. But let's come to this story that I've mentioned a couple of times. Indeed, it's a second lead on the front page of the Daily Telegraph today. Not least because the Education Secretary has written an article for them. White working class pupils are being written off, is the headline. Children in Britain are being written off by society, so says Bridget Phillipson. Now, of course, we're getting ready for A-level results day on Thursday. She's called it a national disgrace that so many white working-class pupils are unable to get grades required for university. She says Labour is preparing a series of interventions to tackle the issue in a white paper. We'll hear more this autumn. They include publishing more data on how white pupils are performing, as well as harnessing AI to identify schools falling short. Labour seeking to tackle claims made by Reform UK that it, Labour, has abandoned its traditional working-class voters. Just before I get more detail, if you've got on in life, and I hope you have, and I'm sorry, I wouldn't normally say to take part in this conversation, it would help if you're white, how did you do it? How was school for you? Do you feel, or if you are, you've got a couple of children who are at school now, perhaps those key ages, getting 14, 15, 16, and then you've got a white boy, you've got white boys, white girls, do you think they're being left behind? And if you made a success of your life, and I hope you did, how did you do it? And now, of course, if you are parents of a black child, mixed-race child, whatever it might be, why is it that in some instances the education ethic is better ingrained? I do look at the post-COVID landscape of education in this country and the number of children, and some of them have emotional issues and they must be helped, but I'm afraid in a lot of instances, I'm going to say this, it's poor parenting that allows children not to go to school. And there are countries elsewhere in the world where people walk for hours to get to their school because they know education is the key. So I hope you did get on. If you were white and the school failed you, how did you do it? We'll pick up on that. But let's speak first with someone who can give us some pointers for our conversation. Dr. Lisa McKenzie is an academic and senior inequality lecturer at the University of Bedfordshire and joins me now. Might I ask, what was the background you came from? Good morning.
Good morning. I'm white. I'm working class. I come from Stockney in Ashfield in Nottinghamshire.
That's mining country, isn't it?
That's right. It's Lee Anderson's constituency now.
Right.
My dad was a coal miner. My mum was a factory worker. Generations of my family, that's what they did. And when I was 16 in 1984, I left school with no qualifications, no education, and went to work at the Pretty Polly factory with my mum.
At the what factory, doctor?
The Pretty Polly factory.
Oh, Pretty Polly. They made tights,
yeah.
Didn't they? Was it
they
tights?
They made tights, yeah. Made tights with my family, all the rest of the women in my family, for 11 years.
Right.
And so, yeah, I am definitely white and working class.
School failed you?
Yeah. I mean, school's, to be fair, and I speak to young people today. I'm also in contact today with young people who go to special education schools. They're usually children that have been kicked out of school. And in this area where I live now, in Nottinghamshire, it's quite astonishing how many kids are actually getting kicked out of schools that, and ending up in, special needs schools.
And is it, as the education secretary says, Doctor, is it a white thing?
Not white. It's not predominantly a white thing. It's a working class thing. It's also a geographical thing as well. You know, where I live now, I still live in Nottinghamshire, still live in a mining community. You know, these are the places. I mean, you said earlier that they were left behind. You know, that's not quite right. They were purposefully left out, and that's where I would argue.
Who left them out, and how?
Well, I think what they've been, I mean, this is 40 years in the making. This is from deindustrialisation. And we shouldn't talk about this as if it's just today. I mean, there's reports going back 20 years about white working class kids actually not attaining well at school. So this is not a new thing. But, you know, for 40 years, these communities have been left out. They've been deindustrialised. There's been no investment in them. They've been forgotten. They're unfashionable. You know, I work in universities. I've worked in some very elite universities who wouldn't even acknowledge that there is such a thing as the white working class, never mind what is happening to them.
Well, how do they term those people then? They can't just ignore them.
Well, they have. That's what they do. What they do is they'll recognise that there's problems regarding race, and they'll talk about race. But then what they've done is they've almost marginalised white working class people.
But, Doctor, those institutions, if you had a white bloke who's a bus driver married to a white woman who's a hospital cleaner, surely they'd accept their working class, wouldn't they?
Except they're working class, but unfortunately now, because of that category, white working class, a lot of, middle class bourgeois academics, they feel very uncomfortable with that title. It's been very difficult for someone like me to talk about this, because obviously what I want to do is talk about class inequality in Britain. But, there is data, there is evidence about what has happened to white working class people in this country.
What needs to happen now, Doctor?
What needs to happen now? This is a bigger issue. It's not just education. Bridget Phillipson can't come in and say, we're going to target white working class kids. What we've got to do is look at the inequalities throughout the country. You know, in the ex-mining communities, in the deindustrialised communities, we've got extremely low paid work. If there is any at all, there's sort of some sort of imagination at the moment going around that there's lots and lots of jobs. Well, there isn't. There's lots of jobs in agencies that you can work for 4 hours a week. That's not a real job. That's not a job. So what we've got is we've got large parts of the country that's been left out. And that's, we've got to do the proper levelling up. It's a proper levelling up. We've got half of the country that has absolutely been abandoned for 40 years. So it shouldn't be a surprise to anybody that white working class people who live in those communities.
Okay, lastly, why do white working class boys fail in London schools then? Because London's not been ignored.
No, it's not. And again, there's data there as well. And again, it's because for the last perhaps 20 years, there's been targeted programs towards black working class kids. That doesn't, you know, I'm not, it's not a zero sum game.
No, I get
all
you.
All children should be, this is a working class area.
All right. I must leave it there. Doctor, thank you for your time. Dr. Lisa McKenzie, an academic senior inequality lecturer at the University of Bedfordshire. Showing how she has, and I'm sure she won't mind saying, moved from the world of making tights to academe. Christopher in Cardiff says, I'm a white male. I was useless in school, unable to retain and digest information, but I had a great hands-on man. I left school at 15. I've never been out of work. I've never filled in an application form or a CV. I worked all day, every day. I paid off my mortgage before my 40th birthday, and I've never had any other debt. It's about an attitude to work. Congratulations. So it took me a lot longer to pay. Mind you, it didn't help. I bought the house twice, I suppose. John's in Woodford to talk about deportations. You're on the radio. Good morning, John.
Oh, hello, Nick.
Yes, sir. Talk deportations.
Well, deportation, I'm not thinking about the people that are going to be deported. I'm thinking about the woman, the poor woman somewhere that has suffered rape.
Yep. Yep.
And she hears that the man that raped her, who should be serving another, God knows how many years, because he deserves it.
It's cash v. scruples. Which is the right one? We're saving 52 grand, but that rapist has gone back to Indonesia, to make another one, and there will be no action taken. Which is more important, cash or scruples?
It's more important that we pay for his keep here to punish him, and so that the woman knows that the punishment is being given. I mean, it seems so unfair, of course. There's a lot
now,
more
it's
involved.
It's very important to say that of the 10,722, they are not, or in fact the majority of them are not rapists. They're involved in other sorts of crimes. So someone who's a drug dealer... Let's pick another country at random. Here we are. A Ugandan drug dealer. Do we send him home?
Oh, yes. I'm talking about the person that has done somebody physical harm. That's the person we should keep here, and that person knows that person is spending their time in prison for what they did to them, and we should pay for that.
John, thank you. Cash v. Scruples. Scruples is John's vote. Dave in Glentworth. Dave, cash or scruples and why? Good morning.
Morning, Nick. I think this is just a totally ridiculous soundbite again from the minister.
Tell me why.
Nick, I sit in two courts in Lincolnshire, and I might hear up to, say, 20 cases a day in a remand court or in a court which is called a gap court, which is a guilty anticipated plea.
Sorry, so you are... what are you? You're a magistrate?
I'm a magistrate,
you are a
yeah.
JP. Right, OK, gotcha. Yeah. OK, go on.
Yep. So... many of these are going to be very low-level shoplifting or minor offences, speeding and things like that, some a lot more serious.
Yeah.
So if only 25% on that day are foreign nationals, which would be a very low figure, five on that day would be liable for deportation.
Right.
So four courtrooms roughly in one of the courthouses I sit in would be running a day. So just from our courthouse alone, we could be deporting 20 people on one day for things like shoplifting or speeding.
The border
force can't cope with any of this. It's bloody nonsense.
Oh, I see what you're... this is a different take. The Conservatives haven't thought of this one.
We've got 150 magistrates' courts in the UK. Before you even start to look at Crown Courts and High Courts.
Oh, my goodness.
Loads every day.
The system can't take it.
Well, it can't take it now, as it's not going to do much better to anchor it this way.
So what's the... do you see the argument for high-level criminals being deported, Dave?
I do, to a degree, but you've got to punish people in this country because, as other callers have said, if you don't punish them here, justice has got to be done. It's got to be done, it's got to be seen to be done. Now, there is a process in place where people who are serving long sentences that aren't from this country are supposed to be deported at the end of that sentence, but there's no joined-up thinking between the prison service... no. And the Home Office and the Border Force to say, well, actually, we're not... this person served 10 years of their 20-year sentence. They're going out on licence, but no one's expecting them to be released on that day. They're expecting them to be released at some other day.
Dave, you've absolutely nailed it. Such a good point you've made. I'm grateful to you. Thank you, Dave. Let's talk about background. Working class, how they're being failed. Working class children are being failed in school. Sean's in Tavistock. Good to hear from you again, Sean. You put a business together, didn't you?
I did, Nick, but I was raised in the 70s in a working class area in a very poor education. The poorest white working class areas are in English Labour constituencies, going back generations, with post-colonial guilt. That's what it was all about. So the teachers they had was the old generation Second World War masters, very good, followed by the hippies, you know, the social workers who came in to be teachers, the privileged educations, Workers of the World Unite, coming from a private education. And I had to fight my way out through the army.
Yeah, I know you.
The army got me at the rat race, and I formed a business later on and educating myself. But believe me, this is about attacking reform base. So this lady education secretary, a Marxist, is now talking about the white working class. The first time for 40, 50 years they've talked about this, purposely to attack reform. That's
why,
what it's all about.
Why has it been allowed to go on for so long? Why hasn't someone...
post-colonial guilt. They feel bad about what we did in the empire days. So the migrants came over. They focused on them. All the projects, like the lady said before, about black kids getting opportunities to level up. And the white working class were left behind. Look at the state of Rotherham, Nick.
Do you think, lastly, the reform is the party of the working class now, as Nigel Farage would assert?
The danger with reform is he knows how to whip up the white working class, Farage, as I said to him on your programme. He's not the answer. You need balance. And with Starmer on the hard left and Farage on the hard right, that is not balance.
Sean, always enjoy speaking with you. We've got to get to the news headlines. We'll have more on this. Coming up in the next hour, get ready, drivers over 70 to face eye tests every 3 years. Edmund King is president of the AA. He told LBC...
people have to declare that they're fit to drive. And there is some evidence that some people don't make a true declaration. So I think an eye test is a small price to pay.
Come on, if you are in your 70s, or if your mum, dad, or grandparents are in their 70s, how good a driver are they? plus farewell to... Piggybacks to the TV legend who created Blue Peter will have an appreciation of her career. The 8:45 LBC News headlines now. Thomas Watts.
A government minister has told Nick that new deportation rules will ensure foreign criminals are no longer a drain on the public purse. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near a hospital in Gaza. A push to reduce road deaths could see the introduction of mandatory eye tests for older drivers. LBC weather, hot sunshine in the south, cloudy in the north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed eastbound between junctions 13 at Cheveley and 12 at Theale. It's because of those barrier repair works which are still taking place. And the M11 southbound, about halfway between junctions 5 at Loughton and 4 at the North Circular Road, there's been an accident, so there are queues on the approach. Avanti West Coast, London North Western, the Lioness Line and Bakerloo Line services are now running at Watford Junction, but with severe delays. Also, the Mildmay Line remains suspended between Gospel Oak and Stratford after that fire that happened earlier next to the tracks. And also Southern remains suspended between Uckfield and Crowborough, but that's all down to a signal failure.
LBC.
So, what are you watching at the moment?
Squid Game, Dad.
Let's watch it together this weekend. That'd be nice. What's it on again?
Netflix. You've got EETV, so you just switch it on.
What season are we up to?
Four. That's Stranger Things, Mum.
And what about the kids?
Don't worry, they'll watch Cocomelon for the 100th time.
Switch on Netflix with EETV. Plus, change up sports and entertainment. It's TV with the ultimate flex for the whole family.
EETV requires EE broadband. Separate 24-month contracts for TV and broadband. Content may vary, terms apply.
Call Nick Ferrari now. 0345 6060 973. This is LBC.
Chase is the digital bank that puts you first.
What does that mean?
Well, most people don't bank 9 to 5. That's why Chase customer support is available 24/7.
So I can contact them whenever works best for me?
You've got it. Mm. You can chat to a real person through the app.
That's handy.
And you can always call up to speak with them directly.
Hello. Now we're talking.
Join the UK's number one bank for customer satisfaction. Chase. See what your money can do. 18 plus UK residents. Eligibility applies. Claim based on YouGov UK Banks and Building Society's rankings 2024. Verify at chase.co.uk/YouGov.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centreline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required, terms apply, see website.
Save this summer with Lidl Plus. Get 2 for £7 on burgers, jumbo sausages and more. And get 2 for £3.50 on our plant burgers, veggie sausages and more veggie classics. Download Lidl Plus and start saving this summer today.
18 plus GB only while stocks last. Terms apply. See lidl.co.uk/LBTV. Offer ends 27th of August.
Train to Peckham. Kids in tow. Rooftop cinema time.
6 packs of popcorn. I think one will do, Nina.
Ah, clear skies, comfy seats, a talking panda, clearly what we all needed. Okay, everyone's seated and happily doing panda impressions. I wonder when Nan can watch the kids so I can come back with James. Oh, just the two of us.
Download the Southern Railway app to book advanced tickets from only £8 on off-peak journeys. Southern Railway, where every stop is a story. Terms apply, see our website for full details.
Because you never know what little pickles will get themselves into. For pet insurance policies as unique as they are, visit petsinapickle.co.uk.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
9 minutes before nine, Malcolm in Wokingham to talk about this deportation idea, which actually seems to be unravelling now, having spoken to Dave the JP and others. Your view of it. Good morning.
Good morning, Nick. Yeah, it's first time on your show. Very
Thank
good
you
show.
Very
Enjoy
much.
It most, mostly. Yeah, so my thinking was the two things that are in sorry, tongue tied there.
Sorry.
What's happening is this £54,000 to keep a criminal in jail in this country.
Mm.
If they deported them to the country of origin, the danger is that they get set free, so they do not serve their punishment.
Yeah, that's a
and
worry.
That can
yeah.
reflect that can reflect on you know on someone that's endured the crime in this country.
Yeah,
that's definitely unjust. So my thinking was some of these countries would pay a lot less to keep a criminal in jail. I mean, considerably a lot less. So if the government were to do an undertaking so that, for argument's sake, they fulfilled their 10-year sentence abroad, that may be half the cost to that mm-hmm. country. Mm-hmm. So if the UK government were prepared to pay that, two things would happen, in my opinion. One, the taxpayer would save half of the 54,000. Yeah. And the other thing is, no doubt, if they served a full term in some of these other countries, the punishment would probably be a lot harsher than sitting 10 years in a prison in this country.
We've got to hope that the authorities in every country from Estonia to Zambia would be happy to do that.
Well, it was just an idea that maybe if there was an undertaking to do that, and you could even put it down as a profit to that country. You know, if it was going to cost them £20,000 a year, for argument's sake, pay them £30,000 a year.
Yes,
the UK government saved £24,000.
So. Yeah, I absolutely get your maths, and you're saving maybe over £20,000 per head, and there are 10,722 foreign people in our jails. So I can't immediately do the maths, but that's a heck of a chunk of change. So that speaks to the argument of it, Malcolm. Thank you, and thanks for your kind comments about the show. Anne's in Birmingham to talk about the fact that white working class children have been left behind. We seem to hear these reports almost on a monthly basis. What needs to be done to put it right, would you say?
Hello.
Hello, Anne. What needs to be done, do you think?
Well, I don't really think that it's such a class issue. If we could just take out privileges and things and just let's think about the basics. We've got English, we've got math, all the other subjects. At the end of the day, isn't it about application?
So what you're saying is that, sorry, it's the teachers then who we have to look to here?
No. I think teachers are probably, by and large, are doing a sterling job.
Right.
I think at the end of the day, maybe a lot of these things come from home. And to apply yourself and encouragement from your parents to get your homework done and apply yourself.
And we don't think that white parents perhaps as industrious as others? Is that what we're saying?
No, I don't think we're saying that. I think it's a shame that there doesn't seem to be, if you like, the ethic there to want to apply oneself.
But I wonder imagine if you've come to this country from Africa or parts of Asia where you don't have things such as state education and possibly you had to walk hours to go to a school. You arrive in this country and, my God, we have free education and there's a school just the other side of the park. And unfortunately, if you've had all your lineage is British, you might not realise the extraordinary benefits that provides.
And that's a shame that we perhaps don't understand or appreciate how lucky we are, how lucky
absolutely
we are, and
you.
How important education is. And that is why there are, countries in this world who really appreciate it, and they will walk that extra yard to get that education.
Not extra yard, and sometimes I think they walk many, many yards. They walk miles to get that for education. And you made some good points. Thank you. And if we're talking about education, that leads us into a tremendous television show, which was education. It was fun. It was games. It was like having your brother or your sister on the telly. It was fantastic. Look, I speak of Blue Peter and have to tell you that I think everyone would accept the TV legend who created it has sadly died. She was 92. Brilliant as it was, it ran from 1958 to 2022 when it then moved online. There were the occasional slips.
Elephants don't have tusks.
Oh, we're having a slight penny down here. Slight problem.
Get out of the way, I think.
You're supposed to be drinking it, Lulu.
It happens to all elephants, don't it?
Alex, thank you very much indeed. Can you...
Yes, thank you. I'll just stand back a little bit.
Well, I think we're going to see all sorts of very exciting new and different things when we're in the salon.
He's a life-size model of a businessman. Oh, dear.
It was a tremendous show, but you heard a moment when an elephant decided to relieve itself on set with John Noakes, Valerie Singleton and Peter Purves, and one of Mark Curry's lesser glorious moments. And let's turn to one of the presenters I've just named, the brilliant Peter Purves, former Blue Peter presenter. Good to have you on, sir. My late brother worked in the BBC, you might have known it, at the same time as Ms. Baxter, who said she was a rather single-minded person. Is that a fair description, Peter? Morning.
Yes, indeed. I wasn't expecting that quote. yes. She was an absolute powerhouse, and she
she created the format that made the show work, and it's worked, as you know, for so long. Yeah. But this, you sort of equated it with education at the beginning. I take issue with that, because it was, although it was educational, that's not what its aim was. It was an entertainment for children, and it had small, short items, so that if there was something that, you know, the boys might like, the girls wouldn't like. Mm. In a few moments, 3-4 minutes, it's on to something else. There was always something coming on in any program that most children would actually enjoy. It was a very clever format, one of the first magazines, and it was educational in lots of ways, but not that wasn't the aim. The aim was to entertain, and we tried our best to do that, and with her incredibly firm hand on it, it stayed the same, you know. Always different items, but the same familiar format, and people grew to love it. I know not everybody did. It was accused of being middle class. What's wrong with that? And so on. But it really was, and it was because of her strength that the programme was such a success.
And I understand, Peter, she made it clear that the viewer was at the heart of everything you and your colleagues had to do.
Absolutely, no question about it. And not to talk down to them. You said it quite well at the beginning, you know, you said your brother and sister are talking to you. We weren't supposed to be an uncle figure. No. We weren't supposed to be a teacher. We were supposed to be the friends or relatives of the children that we were talking to. I mean, the aim was, it was made and aimed at 7 to 12-year-olds.
Yep.
It's not a massive range, but the parents watched as well, and they grew to love it as well. I mean, most people over the age of 45, I suppose, know me and Valerie.
I grew up with you. You grew up with you and you, Valerie and John, Peter.
Didn't do you any harm.
Well, it's kept me in work, Peter. Lovely speaking with you. Look after yourself. Thank you so much for coming. That is the great Peter Purvis.
Thanks very much.
Farewell to Biddy Baxter, the TV legend who's died aged 92. Time to move on. And the idea that if you're approaching 70 or you're over 70, you will face an eye test every 3 years. Anne Flanagan is 72.
We often hear about younger drivers, but each of us who gets behind the wheel, including older and experienced drivers like myself, each of us has a responsibility to make our roads safer.
Plus, we'll be watching carefully to see if any of those 522 people who were arrested on Saturday are actually put through the courts. And we'll bring you coverage if that takes place. And more on the story we just got started on. White working-class children in Britain are being written off by society. So says the Education Secretary. What is to be done on that? Those stories and more follow the 9 o'clock news on LBC.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 9 o'clock, LBC has learned the law could be changed to stop human rights rules being used to block criminals' deportations. The Home Office is drawing up plans to narrow the criteria foreign offenders can use for legal challenges. It's part of wider efforts to crack down on spurious and long-running appeal cases. The Victims Minister, Alex Davis-Jones, has told Nick that too many criminals are a drain on the public purse.
As you have debated time and time again, certain articles under the ECHR are being abused, particularly Article 8, this right to a family life. There are spurious reasons being given, and we feel like it needs to be tightened up. So that is exactly what we're doing as well. So we're reviewing that to make sure that those who do have specific eligibility to retain are done so.
Another 15 countries, including Australia and India, have signed up to a Deport Now, Appeal Later scheme. It means foreign offenders would be returned to those countries before any legal challenges, which would then be heard remotely. Al Jazeera has accused Israel of a targeted assassination after 5 of its journalists were killed in an airstrike in Gaza. Israel's military has confirmed it was targeting one of them, the prominent correspondent Anas al-Sharif. The IDF says he was a Hamas terrorist leader posing as a reporter, a claim strongly rejected by journalism groups. Mandatory eye tests for older drivers could be introduced as part of efforts to reduce road deaths. Ministers are also looking at toughening the rules on drink driving. LBC's Fraser Knight has more.
England and Wales has the highest alcohol limit for drivers in all of Europe, and these proposed changes could see that limit being reduced to come into line with Scotland, where the change was made in 2014. Figures just a few weeks ago showed 16% of all road traffic accidents in a year were linked to alcohol.
A new road safety strategy will be published later in the year. And Biddy Baxter, the long-serving editor of Blue Peter, has died at the age of 92. She is credited with transforming the show into the world's longest-running children's programme. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was up at 35.9131. The pound buys $1.34 and €1.15. LBC weather in the south, dry, hot and sunny. In the north, cloudy with some heavy showers. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watt.
Some companies try to reel people in by promising quick cash if you pay them to claim work expenses. But think twice before taking the bait, because they might just want to land a commission. And it turns out you aren't eligible to claim anything. You'll have to pay HMRC back, and it's unlikely the company will refund any fees. So don't get caught out. Check if you're eligible and make a claim with HMRC for free online. Just search Don't Get Caught Out.
This is LBC from Global. Leading Britain's conversation with Nick Ferrari at breakfast.
3 minutes after nine, Monday, August the 11th. Coming up in this hour, drivers over 70 to face eye tests every 3 years, as you heard on the LBC News Bulletin. Also the aspect of cutting down even more the amount of alcohol you're allowed, putting effectively the rest of the United Kingdom in line with Scotland. We'll give you more details on that. We will keep an eye on the courts. If anything does move, 522 people arrested. Will there be charges following Saturday's demonstration where apparently you are aiding terrorism if you carry a sign? Yes, arrested for holding a sign. Look, I'm as hard-line as you like, but even for me, that's a bit of a stretch. And we will return to the fascinating story we just got started on, but I had the opportunity to speak to one of the great Blue Peter stars. You can sort of work out someone's age by the Blue Peter team with which they grew up. But we will come back to the white working-class pupils who are being written off, says Education Secretary Bridget Phillips.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973. Text 84850. Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC.
If you are approaching 70, if you're in your 70, if you're in your 80s, what about having an eye test every 3 years? Now, what I'm going to ask you is, I appreciate we've got a wide age range, not everybody, but you might have a dad or a mum or both, hopefully, in that age group. You might have granddad or grandmum who's in that age group as well. Be honest. How safe are they as drivers? The idea is drivers over the age of 70 would be banned from the roads if they failed compulsory eye tests under an overhaul of the UK's road safety laws. In what is expected to be the biggest shake-up for two... Why is it always in health, the biggest... In schooling, the biggest shake-up? Anyway, here we go. The government would look to reduce the drink drive limit, put it in line with Scotland, punish drivers with penalty points if punish drivers with penalty points if passengers fail to wear a seatbelt. I don't like that. That is draconian. There could also be tougher penalties for uninsured drivers. Well, I'm all for that. The measures are expected to be contained in a road and safety strategy due to be published in the autumn. I don't know if you should fine the driver. Should you? What if your child... Oh, I don't know. Here we are. President of the AA, Edmund King, told LBC...
When you look at the graphs, younger drivers are most involved in crashes. And then for older drivers, at the age of 70 to 75, they're relatively safe. At the age of 80 and then 85, that is where the increase of crashes per mile driven really goes up. Eye tests for all drivers is actually a good idea. Not only does it help with road safety, but it can pick up other health problems. And think at the moment, at the age of 70, that it's a self-declaration. People have to declare that they're fit to drive. And there is some evidence that some people don't make a true declaration. So I think an eye test is a small price to pay, but it could be argued that look at the age of 75 or 80 rather than the age of 70. You know, in many ways, 70 is the new 50. People are much fitter at the age of 70 than I used to be, say, 30 years ago.
Edmund King from the AA. Let's bring Rob Hurd, who's chair and founder of the Older Drivers Forum, into the conversation. Well, you'll have had time now to percolate some thoughts on this. Your view, Mr. Hurd.
Well, I'm very supportive of compulsory eyesight testing. As Edmund was saying, I believe we should have it for all ages, but definitely as a minimum at the age of 70. You know, we've done a freedom information request to the DVLA, looking at the number of revocations done by the police, depending on age. And it really seems to, as soon as we get to the age of 70, it starts to go almost straight up when you put it against license numbers held as well. So the evidence is there that we really should have. We're one of the worst countries in Europe for our eyesight regulations and driving. And let's think about it. 90% of driving is visual. We need to be able to see the hazard to react to it. So to have good vision is going to make us all safe.
What about older folk in the sticks, in rural areas?
Yeah, at the end of the day, I think that I think our public transport system is letting them down. I think they do need to have better transport systems out there. But there is also this situation that as we age, we do need to think about planning to retire from driving. You know, we plan to retire from work. We plan to give up and retire from driving when our knees pack up from skiing. But also, there'll be a time we all have to retire from driving. And by planning that, we can perhaps reposition ourselves to places where we're going to have better public transport, better communities and families around us.
Well, that's like mother's love and apple pie, isn't it? It's very desirable, but what is it in reality, Mr. Hurd?
Yeah, it is a difficulty, isn't it? It really is.
I can't imagine life without a car, well, except when it was nicked. I can't imagine life without a car.
Yeah, I know. There will be a time, unfortunately, though, that we do have to retire. And just because we want to drive, I mean, if you have to think about it, you know, driving is a gift. It isn't a right. And in fact, we all need to make sure that at any age that we are fit and healthy to drive behind the wheel of a car, because otherwise we'll end up causing the death of ourselves or someone else on the road.
You're chair and founder of the Older Drivers Forum. What will they make of the idea as well that you could get penalty points if a passenger doesn't wear their seatbelt?
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is, even though we have quite a stiff penalties at the moment for other offences, I think we're seeing, looking at road safety, because I work as a road safety consultant as well, around about 20% of deaths are still down to people not wearing their seatbelts. And I think when they're looking at that and the cost, that's not only to economy, but also the families and those suffering from it, they're really, you know, we've years tried to make it would just be a penalty without points. Now, actually, I think they decided to make it tighter to try and encourage those extra people to take it on.
And finally, they also talk of a potential medical test for older people to look for something such as dementia. How are we going to test for that?
Well, there's actually some really good tests. We work with Driving Mobility. They're an organisation who support the DVLA and the DFT in carrying out medical fitness to drive assessments. And some of the things they will do is cognitive testing to assess someone whether they're medically fit to drive. And
filling out a paper, just help me, or answering questions verbally? What does it mean?
Yeah, some of it is verbally, some of it is drawing graphs, some of it is a clock face and trying to put the numbers on a clock face. And it's actually really surprising to actually see
going to be a hell of a costume for
have
this,
early
isn't it?
Signs of dementia can actually have an effect on how they represent something and what they see rather than what we all see.
It's going to be a hell of a cost on this, isn't there?
It is, but if you think about it, every year fatalities cost the UK economy £43.2 billion a year.
How do we get to that figure?
When you add up the cost of policing time, increase of insurance premiums, you look at property damage, all those sort of things, they add up to that round about £43.2 billion. It's a recognised amount. That
£1 billion a week, almost.
Yeah,
really?
Almost. Yeah, absolutely.
Stunning. Thanks for your time, Rob Hurd, chair and founder of the Older Drivers Forum. I didn't know this. We're talking about seatbelts. Existing in all states, 3 penalty points will be issued to drivers who are not wearing a seatbelt. I knew that. Maximum fine of £500. I knew that. Passengers in possession of a licence who don't wear a seatbelt, you can get 2 penalty points. Did you know that? So you're driving someone in your car. I'm driving in my car. You're driving someone in your car who doesn't put their seatbelt on. They can get 2 points. I never knew that. That's a bit draconian, isn't it? Jean's in Bromley. Jean, what do you say? Good morning.
Oh, good morning. I'd like to start off by saying I'm 86.
Right.
And when I was 80, I got so fed up with the press and the media slagging off older drivers. And 80-year-olds shouldn't be on the road.
Yeah.
So I thought, voluntarily, I thought, I'm fed up with this. I will have a go at taking one of these advanced driving tests.
Oh, wow.
Which I took. It was just over a two-hour drive. a bit strenuous. I passed it at A grade and got a gold star.
Oh, well done.
Yeah, I was very pleased with myself.
Of course you were. Yeah, well done.
Anyway, and also, of course, I have an eye test every year. I sound very puritanical, don't I?
Well, you do. Yes, I know. You're very, very fantastic.
Anyway, I've now decided I'm 6 years further on. I think it's about time I took it again. So I have applied. I did ring them, actually, and left a message on the answer phone.
When you say you ring them, who do you do this with?
I heard Rossbach.
Rossbach. Oh, Ross Society of Prevention of Accidents.
That's it. Yeah.
Right.
Originally, going back to the 60s, I did an ordinary IAM. Going back to the
Institute
60s.
Of Advanced Motor.
Yeah.
Oh, this is like a
question,
isn't it?
Yeah. I did that.
Right.
But anyway, just to say that anybody that is in doubt themselves,
yep.
You know, and
how good a driver are you?
Well, I suppose I'm pretty good.
How many accidents? How many years have you been behind the wheel? How old?
Don't. 70 years this year.
70 years behind the wheel. How many accidents?
Next year.
How many accidents have you had?
I have had two accidents when I have been stationary in a queue and somebody has backed into the side of me.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah, one was in Regent Street.
Right.
In Regent Street on a Saturday morning. I'm sitting stationary in the car and a lorry was backing off from a shop, backed into the side of me.
How many times have you been done for speeding?
Once.
How fast were you going?
33 in a 30.
Oh, you poor woman. I can't believe they did that.
33 in a 30 mile.
How many times have you been caught in a yellow box junction?
Once. Once. Right. That was again. I'm not making excuses.
You
I'm giving
making
a reason.
Okay.
I was in an area that I didn't know in London. And
you're a lawbreaker. You're a lawbreaker who breaks a speed limit, who stays in yellow box junctions. How many times have you been had up for drug driving?
No, I haven't.
How many times have you been had up for transporting arms or drugs?
No, I haven't. Here, but I'll tell you something that
finish off, Jean of Bromley.
I'll tell you something. I don't know if this is still applicable, but when I was driving my mother as a passenger who had dementia, she would not put on a seatbelt. And I have got to this day, I have still got her exemption certificate, which you can get, you know, for
seatbelts. And was it because she just felt claustrophobic and she was just nervous to be fastened in? Because
she was just irate about any restrictions.
I love the sound of your mum. I hope she listened to the show. We used to make her. Gina, I have enjoyed our conversation. Good luck when you take your advanced motor for 86. Gosh, that I have half your vim and vinegar when I reach 86 will make me a very happy man. Take more calls on this, Barry. We're going to hear from you. By the way, we are getting through the work, so please don't think why the white working class children being let down in school. This is a bit of a political ploy. And a prominent football player finds himself on the, no, not the back pages, the front page.
Curtis Jones and then Salah. That is Mo Salah's 200th Liverpool goal. Generational brilliance. A legend in plain sight.
Well, that was Mo Salah scoring his 200th goal for Liverpool against Crystal Palace. It went rather differently, didn't it, at the Charity Shield, Community Shield, whatever they call it, yesterday. And congratulations to Crystal Palace. But Mr. Salah is in the headlines after he's mocked football bosses who paid tribute to a legendary Palestinian player killed in an Israeli attack on Gaza, but did not say how he died. So UEFA put out the announcement. Mr. Salah says, can you tell us how he died, where and why? Should UEFA have done more? We'll come to that. It's 9:15, LBC News Headlines. Thomas Watts.
The Home Office is looking at changing the law to stop human rights rules being used to block criminals' deportations. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists, including a prominent correspondent, have been killed in an Israeli strike in Gaza. And ministers are looking at tougher driving rules as part of a push to reduce road deaths. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south. Cloudier in the north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed eastbound between junctions 13 at Cheveley and 12 at Feel. Those emergency repair works are still taking place. And traffic is being held on the M25 clockwise just before junction 6 at Godstone. It's because a van has broken down and there are delays of about 4 miles on the approach. In Crystal Palace, Central Hill remains closed both ways because of an accident. And in St John's Wood, the A41 Finchley Road remains closed northbound after a burst at water main. On the underground, there are severe delays on the Bakerloo line, and on London Overground there are severe delays on the Lioness and Mildmay lines, and Thames Link services remain disrupted. They can't run between Gillingham and Raynham.
This is LBC.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Call Nick Ferrari now, 0345 6060 973, LBC.
Ears are great, aren't they? One on each side of your head for stereo. It's because of ears that radio ads can amplify your advertising. 40 million adults listen to commercial radio every week. That's 80 million ears, give or take. See radio differently at radiocentre.org.
A southern train is a place where family moments become more peaceful. Where you can spread out and a game of I Spy gets a scenic upgrade with snacks, stories and the occasional sheep for a bonus point. Less stress, more yes with kids' tickets for £2 at southernrailway.com. Terms apply.
At This Vet, Mia is the owner, surgeon, rota manager and puppy wrangler. And now she and her team are cybersecurity experts too.
Mia, someone tried accessing our system. Phishing scam. I blocked it.
BT Security Awareness Training turns your team into your first line of defence. Quick to set up from just £1.25 per user per month. Cybersecurity is everyone's business. Thankfully, not just Mia's. Search BT Business Cybersecurity. T&Cs apply. Prices exclude VAT at 20%. 12-month minimum term applies.
With Little Plus Bakery Spin, simply shop and spin to win a free Little Bakery coupon on every shop. Download Little Plus and get a little bit more at the Retail Industry Awards Supermarket of the Year. 18 plus GB residence, various prizes available, subject to availability, ends 20th of August. Full T's and C's apply. See little.co.uk/spin.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060 973.
Who knew? Every day's a school day. If you've got a driver's licence and you're in a car and you've not got your seatbelt on, you're not driving, you're a passenger, you can get 2 points. I never knew that. Never knew. Barry's in Plymouth. You're on the radio. Barry, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Good morning, sir.
Hello, sir.
Probably you're not aware, but when you turn 65, yeah, if you hold an HGV or a PSV licence...
Heavy goods vehicle, you passenger have, service yep, vehicle, yep.
You have to renew your licence yearly... And part of that renewal is to do a full eye test.
When you say full, I mean, there's no such thing as a partial eye test, is there?
No, going to an optometrist and you have a full test.
Oh, I see. Not when you take your driving test. Can you give me that licence plate over on that Ford over there,
yeah,
or something like
20
that?
20 metres, yeah. And it's been for a while, and myself, I think it is a good idea, and I'll give you a prime example why.
You can wear your glasses, obviously, if you're wearing glasses. They don't expect you to do it without
sure.
your glasses.
You do it with and without.
Yeah, right.
But the beginning of the year, I didn't feel comfortable trying to read a number plate at 20 metres.
Right.
Consequently, I've done it on my own back as an eye test, mm-hmm. and it come to light that I had cataracts. Consequently, where my license was due for renewal within about a 4 or 5 month period, mm-hmm. I then went and had a private cataract removal operation done to retain my correct vision.
Good.
So, consequently, that's a prime example why it should be imperative for people to do that.
Are you still working?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And you're driving HGV?
Yep, yep. And I still enjoy it, and I'm a widower now, so it gives me a... Well, life goes on, in a sort of sense.
Can I ask you something? I'm going to come to this conversation about... And I'm assuming you did go to school and you're a white fella. Did you do well at school or did school fail you? What would you say, Barry?
Well, firstly, I'm mixed race.
Oh, are you?
That puts a spanner in the works
not
in that
all.
One.
Not at all.
Academically, I struggled, but practical-wise, I done exceptionally well, and in sport and working with my hands and anything like that.
And you've got no desire to retire? You're going to keep working as long as you can?
Well, the time will come where I will naturally lose the sharpness and alertness of what I'm doing.
HGV.
And, yep. And I've got the PSV as well, but even at 66, I can still run rings around lots of youngsters who have been driving 5 minutes.
I'm sure you can. Safe driving, Barry. Good luck to you. You keep working as long as you want to, and may your eyes always be crystal clear. Let's come back to this idea then, but if you were listening in the previous hour, the education sector. Now, a lot of people are saying this is very political, because Nigel Farage has tried to position Reform UK as the party of the working class, and now we hear that working class children are being failed in school. I know this is something we've had so many reports, we've discussed this before. In the previous hour of the show, I spoke with Dr. Lisa McKenzie. Now, she's calls herself a working class academic. She started in life in the Pretty Polly factory making tights. She's now a lecturer at the University of Bedfordshire. She told me about the increasing number of working class kids being kicked out of school.
I speak to young people today. I'm also in contact today with young people who go to special education schools. They're usually children that have been kicked out of school. And in this area where I live now, in Nottinghamshire, it's quite astonishing how many kids are actually getting kicked out of schools and ending up in, special needs school. It's not predominantly a white thing. It's a working class thing. It's also a geographical thing as well. You know, where I live now, I still live in Nottinghamshire, still live in a mining community. These are the places. I mean, you said earlier that they were left behind. You know, that's not quite right. They were purposefully left out. I mean, this is 40 years in the making. This is from deindustrialisation, and we shouldn't talk about this as if it's just today. I mean, there's reports going back 20 years about white working class kids actually not attaining well at school. So this is not a new thing. But, you know, for 40 years, these communities have been left out. They've been deindustrialised. There's been no investment in them. They've been forgotten. They're unfashionable. I work in universities. I've worked in some very elite universities who wouldn't even acknowledge that there is such a thing as the white working class.
Well, let's pick up on that with Mohammed in Birmingham. Mohammed, what do you want to tell me? Good morning.
Hi. So I'm coming from sort of a other side of the fence, I guess.
Right.
But I've gone through school. I've gone through
how
college
was it?
And university. It was quite an experience. So I'm from an immigrant family. So naturally, my father, my mother, they all encouraged me to the nth degree, where they would stay up with me at about 11 o'clock at night, making sure I get the best I can get from school.
When you spoke with some of your mates at school who were white lads, how did they think, what are your mum and dad doing? Or were they having the same with their parents?
So when I explain what happens in my house, that's when they open up about what happened in their house. And usually, and it's not a prejudice point of view.
No, go on.
It is usually they either have a rather troubled household, or they come from a family that doesn't actually acknowledge the power of education. However,
what is it, do you think? Do you mind my asking where your family hail from?
So my family came from Sri Lanka. And
I'm not aware, pardon my ignorance. Is there state education in Sri Lanka?
There is, yes. They have free education. And in order to stay in free education to the higher level, you will need to compete with millions of others who can perform you, basically. So it's a competition-driven.
And your parents were schooled in Sri Lanka then?
Yeah, so my father's from a very poor family. And he
attended school.
He looked at the... Yes, dad? Yes. Yeah. So he went to school, he went to university, he got himself out of poverty, and he, so he knows the value of education. Even if you're not the hardest worker, if you have a degree, then you will be valued.
How surprised were you to see perhaps some of your white mates at school or at college, how really relaxed they were about how they didn't really put in a shift, they didn't study, they were rather diffident about education? How much did that surprise you?
I was honestly shocked. It was almost as if they were not told about the value of education, or they just simply, I mean, benefits was a very new thing for me when we came over here. And my dad came on a work visa, so we never understood how you could just not live, not work throughout your life and just be able to, you know, survive the same as we do.
Yeah.
So it's almost like a safety net that takes away the desperation for education.
And you're a dad now, or not yet, or you know plans to be?
I am a dad now. My approach with my kids have changed, which I may end up turning it into the direction my dad took with me. It's purely because, I am very relaxed with my children regarding their education. But now my youngest is 7 years old, and I'm starting to see that she's falling behind compared to her Asian peers, not her white peers, unfortunately.
Right. So what are you thinking you might do about that?
So I'm thinking of doing what my dad did with me. So sit down, educate her, and make sure that she is able to compete with the cream of the crest, really.
Yeah, with the rest of the class. Mohammed, thanks for sharing so much. Best wishes to your family. Good luck with your little one. I'm sure you'll do the right thing. James in Tower Hamlets. Hello, James. You're a teacher.
Hi. Yes, I am. And I wanted to talk to you about
class,
this.
Sorry, what not class? What years? What years do you teach?
I teach from year 7, which is 11-year-olds, up to year 11, which is 16-year-olds.
And what subject is that?
History.
Right. Okay. What can you tell me?
So, I think there's two issues when it comes to white working class kids and school. And the first one is a generational disengagement with school. And you'll find that they often come from families where their own parents had a very negative time at school. Mm. And perhaps their grandparents did too. And they don't get as much support or encouragement to do well at school at home. Sometimes they from backgrounds which they might have parents on benefits, or they might have never had anybody go to university and they don't want to, and so they're not getting that support at home with their homework or being pushed to get on with things.
How much does a child need to be pushed, James?
How much do they need to be pushed?
Can you tell in a class when you're teaching history, I don't know, the French Revolution, whatever it might be, can you tell this kiddie, when they go home, they're made sure their homework is done, and this kid, this poor little kiddie,
yes.
You can tell straight away, can you?
Yes, you can. And also, even if you're not setting homework, you can tell whether or not their feeling about learning is there. Many working class kids feel that they're not learning anything useful at school, that they are, that it's just sort of fluff and nonsense, and actually real life skills they'll learn from their community and from their friends at home, and that will get them a practical job. And knowing about academic subjects just doesn't do them any good.
Lastly, James, how long have you been a teacher, sir?
I've been a teacher for 11 years.
How did COVID change it?
Badly, but I don't think it's just COVID. I think everything's being blamed on COVID now. But I think it's the increasing use in phones, which I think is actually having the bigger effect on kids. It's much more than the behavioural changes are quite pronounced, but it's much more. It can't just be put down to 6 months, 4 years ago. It's more than that.
Got to move on. Grateful for your input. Have a good summer holiday if you're getting some time off, James. Thank you very much for that. We'll continue this conversation coming up after the news.
Szoboszlai, Salah, something building here for Liverpool. Salah's looking to do it on his own!
Mo Salah hitting the back of the net there, scoring a goal now. He's kicked off over UEFA's coverage of the death of a Palestinian football player. Farewell to Sulaiman al-Abid, the Palestinian Pele. Salah asking, can you tell us how he died, where and why? It was as a result of IDF shelling. Should UEFA have done more? 9:31, breakfast with me, Nick Ferrari on LBC. Newstime, Thomas Watts.
The law could be changed to stop human rights rules being used as loopholes to allow criminals to avoid deportation. LBC has learned the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, is looking at narrowing the criteria used by judges. The broadcaster Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near a hospital in Gaza City. The IDF says it was targeting reporter Anas al-Sharif, accusing him of being a Hamas leader posing as a correspondent. A push to reduce road deaths could see the introduction of mandatory eye tests for older drivers. Ministers are also looking at bringing England and Wales' drink drive limit into line with the lower level in place in Scotland. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south, cloudier in the north. Some heavy showers in the west. A high of 30 degrees.
LBC.
At TfL, we're helping to make bus journeys greener. Our entire bus fleet is 100% low or zero emission at the tailpipe, including those for our Superloop routes, helping improve air quality for all. And we'll have a fully zero emission fleet by 2034. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
Thanks to a blend of petrol and electric, fill up less this summer with the self-charging Mazda 2 Hybrid Centerline. It's available to finance for £199 per month with 0% APR representative. To go further for less this summer, search Mazda 2 Hybrid. Mazda Financial Services, PCP over 48 months, deposit of 5395, optional final payment of 9833. Indemnities may be required. Terms apply. See website.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast on LBC. Call 0345 6060973.
Let's get into more detail on this idea that white working class pupils are being failed in our schools and have been for some years. Many, of course, saying there is a political aspect to this. Bernard in Loughton. Bernard, thanks for calling. What are you going to tell me, sir? Morning.
Yes, come on, sir. I just want to talk about my own situation.
Please.
I was at school in the 30s and 40s.
Mm-hmm.
And I came from a working-class area in London, and we never had scholarships. We had exams. And in a class of 38, I come second from bottom.
Oh, right. Oh, dear.
I was evacuated to Cambridgeshire, and in a class of 42, I came top.
What? Hang on. Within what time span?
Within a couple of years.
Ah. So what worked at the school in the in Cambridgeshire, did you say? Is that where you went?
Yes.
What worked, do you reckon? What clicked in with you when you went to the school in Cambridgeshire?
Well, the thing is to be a farm boy.
To be a farm boy?
Yes, that's what I wanted.
Right. Sorry. But you were doing well at school in Cambridgeshire, though, right?
No. The education was so low that I was so bright. It was unbelievable.
I see what you're saying. Right, I've got it. So the effectively they weren't trying to teach the kids in Cambridgeshire because they just wanted them to work on the land.
Exactly.
Right, okay.
The highest mathematics.
I've got you. So where you were, if I can be not about being rude, where you were failing in London, you took off in Cambridgeshire. Okay. And then did you have children yourself? Your children get well served in school?
No, I decided that I would never have children because of my horrible life.
Oh, I'm so sorry to hear that.
I know. It sounds awful, I know.
Dear
but
idea.
I wanted to know who set the curriculum for the country. I could never find that out.
Well, the government does.
The government.
Yeah, it's called the National Curriculum, and it governments come along and they can change a little bit. Perhaps the most marked was Michael Gove, the last, I was going to say the last Education Secretary, that's wrong, but he was with the last administration and he served as Education Secretary. He put in some pretty
seismic changes, which a lot of teachers thought got the wrong way around. Bernard, thank you for your background. Lisa's in Thurrock. Lisa, what can you tell me? Morning to you.
Good morning.
Hello.
I was from... My dad was a lorry driver. Yep. My mum was a cleaner.
Right.
I went to university at 21. I got a Senko I got a teaching degree, a Senko qualification, postgraduate SBLD qualification. So I'm quite well qualified.
Special education leads and coordination, just to remind everyone. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I kind of see, I see the processes that happen in school in terms of, I know for years I was expected to monitor the progress of certain ethnic groups within our community of school.
Which were those groups? Can you recall?
There's your black African minority, there are summer birthdays, there's all kinds of children that you monitor. But one of the children that you don't actually monitor is your white children, funny
enough.
Unless
it's a summer birthday, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, unless, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, for me, I've seen how parents push children. And for me, there was an inherent desire to go to university to better myself.
Mm.
Once I went, my sister went. My cousin went. Now my son goes. My niece has been. It's kind of like it's almost like an expectation, I suppose, once someone sets that, that expectation that, you can go, you can do it. I didn't tell anyone that I was at university for the first year that I was there because I was so scared I was going to fail.
You didn't tell anybody where did you say you'd gone?
No, I didn't go away to university. I studied from home.
Oh, I've got you. I'm so sorry.
I studied
close to
home.
Yep.
So
yep.
For me, it was... I kept it secret because I thought I was going to fail. Mm. And I think that there is a lot of, we need to instill in children that, as much as academics is one thing, and I think academics is really important, but I think we all have a role in life. We all have a place to be and a job to do. So some of our children, although academics is important and they are failing in the academic sense, it doesn't mean to say they don't have any other skills. And I think as a country, we need to be celebrating all of the skills that the children have got, regardless, because we do still need plumbers. We still need engineers and electricians.
Funny you would say that, because there's an article in the papers today, Lisa, that plumbers are making more than some professors now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I don't know how you want to judge. Exactly, do you judge success by money? I mean, that's a little bit crass to do it that fashion, but there's no shame in pulling down a plumber's wage by any means.
No, I think this is, I think that I can understand why she's making another statement in terms of actually, trying to draw more attention to the education system and why she wants to make changes to it.
I will leave it there only for time reasons, Lisa. Thank you for your background. Good luck with what you do in the Senko field. And we will return to this conversation. But let's go to another matter with this extraordinary gifted football player finding himself not on the back pages this time, but the front page.
Curtis Jones and then Salah. Is Mo Salah's 200th Liverpool goal. Generational brilliance. A legend in plain sight.
That was Mo Salah scoring his 200th goal, as I said there, against Crystal Palace, by the way, in 2023. I say that simply because they played Crystal Palace yesterday and they lost at the Community Shield, whatever it's called. But let's go to other matters. And Mr. Salah's on the front page today because he's angry with UEFA. Now, on Friday, UEFA put a post out concerning a football player. Farewell to Suleiman Al-Obeid, the Palestinian Pele. The post goes on. A talent who gave hope to countless children, even in the darkest of times. Well, Mr. Salah picked up on that and asked, can you tell us how he died, where and why? Now, this is a very grave situation, but I will say, do you remember how we said of every journalistic story, who, what, where, when, why, how? You can write any story on the planet. Who, what, where, when, why, how? And what UEFA have chosen to ignore, or certainly not include, is the fact that this football player was killed by IDF shelling, Israeli attack on Gaza. So should they have just put that bit up? Should they have said how he met his fate? Chris Doyle, commentator on Middle East politics and director of the Council for Arab-British Understanding. Are you on Salah's team on this one? Good morning, Mr. Doyle.
Good morning, Nick. I am on his team. I think that if it had been another conflict, let's say that a Ukrainian footballer, Andrei Shevchenko, had been killed by Russian forces, I think that there would have been an acknowledgement of that. But there is an issue, really. I think when dealing with Gaza, that people walk on eggshells. And he was actually killed whilst queuing up to get aid for his family, you know, in a situation where most of the population is dying. So I think it is an issue that you just put out there that he's sort of, you know, died in whatever circumstances.
Why? And you answer this, Mr. George, is say ask them, but why did UEFA, do you imagine, decide to rather sub this story down?
I think it's just they wanted to avoid controversy. I think they're conscious that, you know, whenever you're dealing with Israel-Palestine, you're likely to get sucked into it. But I don't think that should mean that you, when something so serious and so awful like this happens, that you do, as you say, dumb it down. And, you know, there's history, you know, of UEFA involvement with Israel and Palestine as well, you know, in terms of Palestinian footballers not being allowed to travel. I think there's a lot of criticism that they haven't done enough on that. So it's not even just a sort of one-off. I think I think many Palestinians, sports people, in fact, feel that UEFA has been somewhat blind to the situation they face.
Lastly, in a related conversation, the first hour of the show, Mr. Orr, we spoke about the 522 arrests that were made in London on Saturday for people attending that pro-Palestinian demonstration and carrying a particular banner in which they say they oppose genocide and they support Palestine action. Should those arrests have taken place?
Well, the law has been passed, and that is the law, and the police are doing what you have to do under anti-terrorism legislation. My issue was always that the group was and committed vandalism, criminal behaviour, but to make it a prescribed terrorist group risked exactly this, because I think a lot of people were saying, how come we're making more fuss about people who are taking that sort of vandal, that sort of protest using paints on aircraft and so forth, as opposed to the huge war crimes that are going on. So I think that it should never have been a prescribed group that compels the police to actually waste a huge amount of time and resources on this when there are serious threats to our security. I don't believe that Palestine Action is some sort of serious threat to British security in the way, for example, they've been lumped in with the likes of Al-Qaeda or the IRA or ISIS.
Chris Doyle is commentator on Middle Eastern politics, director of the Council for Arab-British Understanding. Thanks for your input on that. We might pick up on that, by the way. Mo Salah. It's very selective, isn't it? I'm afraid I wasn't aware of this Palestinian football player. Clearly, he's a very gifted individual. Farewell to Suleiman Al-Obi, the Palestinian Pele, writes UEFA, a talent who gave hope to countless children, even in the darkest of times. It's been viewed, this was yesterday, it's been viewed by 106.5 million people. There's a lot of people getting involved. Why would you not put sadly killed in Gaza? What, should it have been edited in that fashion? Is there some kind of fear? We might pick up on that. But we're talking what makes working class, successful working class. Debbie's in Waltham Forest. What class are you, would you say? Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Nick. Thanks for having me on. Sorry, what was your question? You asked a question.
I was asking what class do you think you were and how was schooling for you? Did you do well at school? Did you feel it rather let you down? What's the story?
I didn't do well at school. I left school, basically, I was allowed to leave school when I was 15 before I took my exams.
Right.
Because my birthday's in the summer. I'm white working class. I'm from the East End. But I've only recently, in the last two or three years, actually been telling people that I'm working class because I felt like, I'm from London, so I'm from the East End. I've always felt like being an East Ender or a working class person is something that you sort of, you're not proud of.
Why?
You have to hide.
What makes you say that?
Because you just feel like, you know, you want to aspire. When you aspire, you want to be middle class. You want to work hard and be middle class or upper class, you know, which is obviously just a myth anyway. You're never going to be anything other than your class. And I feel like being working class, we should be, the people that are working class should be out there and be proud of what they are.
You know, you said you're never going to be anything but your class. Do you not think that you can move up a class or indeed come down a class?
Yeah, but why would I want to, Nick? See, that's my point. And
right.
I think the society has a view with working class people that when you work hard, see, I went back to school, I've done my degree, I was a teacher for nearly 20 years.
I know, Waltham Forest, you live in a nice part of town.
Yeah.
You're still working class?
Yeah, I was born in Tower Hamlets.
Yeah.
I'm in Waltham Forest, not far from Walthamstow, but I'm still a white working class person.
Right.
From London. So I just feel, why, and I just saw that's the point, why can't I be proud of my heritage, of my culture, of who I am, my background? I'm at least, I mean, my parents, my grandparents were born in London, and I've got two sons, and I've worked really hard to try and help them on the housing ladder so they can stay in London.
Right.
Because I just feel like being working class, I think for the topic you're talking about in terms of the kids at school, we need to show kids in school, working class kids, that you can be working class. You don't need to change your class.
And
proud of who you are and you can achieve.
Are your children working class?
Well, they are, because they work, and they're from a working class background. But they've both been to university. But does that make them anything other than working class? I don't know.
Just because you work, it doesn't make you working class, does it? Let's be honest. There are people who are multimillionaires. They go out and put in a shift. It doesn't mean they're working class.
Yeah.
And did school do well for your boys? Because that's the key part of this conversation.
I would say, because of my background, and I've been to uni, and obviously I was teaching when the kids were younger. I'm retired now, I'm semi-retired now, I was retired from teaching at least. I would say the schools kind of thought my boys would do well, because I was there to support them. Like, I was always there at the parents' evening, you know, made sure the homework was done. Obviously, the teachers knew that their mum was a teacher. So I feel like probably the foot wasn't on the pedal.
All right, I've got to leave it there. I'm already way late to the news. Debbie, good luck with the boys. Thank you for that. We're also talking about the idea of eye tests for drivers 70 and above every 3 years. Calls coming in on that. We will get to those as well. 9:47, LBC News headlines. Thomas Watts.
LBC has learned the law could be changed to stop human rights rules being used to block criminals' deportations. Al Jazeera's accused Israel of a targeted assassination after five of its journalists were killed in an airstrike in Gaza. Mandatory eye testing for older drivers could be introduced as part of efforts to reduce road deaths. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south, cloudy in the north, a high of 30 degrees.
LBC Travel, I'm Joanne Webb. The M4 remains closed eastbound between junctions 13 at Cheveley and 12 at Thiel. It's because of the barrier repair works which are having to take place, and there are queues of about 3 miles on the approach. And also, long delays continue on the M25 clockwise up to junction 6 at Godstone after a van broke down. Two lanes have been closed again, and it's very busy on the approach. In Bromley, the High Street's been closed southbound for emergency repair work, so that's causing delays. On the trains, these problems for London Overground do continue. There are severe delays for the Mildmay line and also the Lioness line. And still no Thameslink service is able to run between Gillingham and Raynham. And that's all down to a track problem.
Coming up at 10 on LBC, James O'Brien.
Hundreds of people arrested for carrying placards, many of them pensioners. Maybe there is a free speech crisis in this country after all.
James O'Brien on LBC.
When you're smiling.
Don't let missing teeth stop you smiling. At Banning Dental, our experts could restore your beautiful smile with premium dental implants. See online for our price match promise. Banning Dental Group Clinics. Keep on smiling.
Keep on smiling. Keep on smiling. And the whole world smiles with you.
BanningDental.co.uk.
This is LBC. Listen on Global Player or the new LBC app. Download it from your app store now.
Angela Rippon, what are you doing here?
I've come to tell you about using energy flexibly, Albert.
Flexibly?
Yes, smart meter owners could get rewarded for moving their energy use, like doing the laundry at off-peak times.
So I don't need to do the splits?
No, Albert, nobody wants to see that.
Get rewarded for using energy flexibly, only with a smart meter. Search Get a Smart Meter today.
Eligibility and availability vary. Consumer action required. Reward schemes and tariffs available to selected customers from selected suppliers.
At TfL, we're making tube journeys faster in the future, with signalling improvements underway on the Circle, District, Hammersmith and City and Metropolitan lines. And there's also the Elizabeth line, already giving you fast journeys across central London. That is how we're making the greener way to travel brighter for everyone. Search TfL Improvement Plan. To the Mayor of London and TfL, every journey matters.
Elizabeth Line is fast compared to other TfL modes. Greener than total estimated petrol and diesel car emissions.
Mickey could try to sell his car privately. Or get it sold today with We Buy Any Car. He could spend days on end trying to sell to a bunch of time wasters. Or sell in a flash and head to the fun fair with the kids. Proper gutted. Or proper impressed. To get a quote in 30 seconds, enter your reg number now at webuyanycar.com.
The road stretches before you, but there's trouble ahead. Stationary cars. You're faced with a McDonald's side mission. Do you A, join the ever-growing queue, or B, take the next exit and treat yourself to a glorious Mackey's?
Detouring to McDonald's.
Start your side mission today.
When you're smiling.
Banning Dental Group Clinics. With over 5,000 top-rated Google reviews. Keep on smiling.
Nick Ferrari at breakfast. Call 0345 6060973.
Going driving with you, Maggie, in just a moment. But I want to look back at the story I just covered, which is the death of the Palestinian football player Mo Salah, asking UEFA why they didn't decide to give any of the details. John says, is Israel such an important country, cannot speak our mind and say the truth? Paul Harmston, who confirmed the soccer player was killed queuing for aid? The Palestinian FA. What does UEFA know about what is happening on the ground? Abdul, shame on UEFA. We don't recognise Israel. The UK can go ahead with all it wants to, but it should be telling the truth of what's going on. One last one on this from Len. This shows the danger of getting involved in things you don't understand. UEFA should not have put the post out, or they should have put out all the details. The journalistic details you keep going, you keep banging on about, Nick. All right, that's who, what, where, when, why, how. Yeah, I suppose it is a bit of a banging on with it. That's all you need. They could put me in journalism college as a lecturer. Hello, everybody. Right. I've only got one lesson. What? We're here for 8 months? No. Who, what, where, when, why, how. And now I'm going to give you a story. Now go and get who, what, where, when, why, how. You can write the lot. Let's go driving with Maggie in Wimbledon. Hello, Maggie. Maggie.
Good morning.
Oh, I was just about to cut you off there. Hello, Maggie. What are you going to tell me about driving? Good morning.
Okay, this is a... Good morning. This is a slight sort of tangent to what you were talking about.
Okay.
But there's a group, a subgroup, you might say, of the elderly who are even more at risk, and that is those with Alzheimer's. I have a friend and was greatly disturbed to discover that if you have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's, you are meant to report yourself to the DVLA. Well, you know...
Wow, I never knew that.
No, neither did I.
What's the thinking behind that?
Well, I don't want to... I wouldn't care to speculate, but it seems like plain stupidity to me. My friend has Alzheimer's. She has the kind of Alzheimer's where she has no insight into her condition. She thinks she's perfectly okay.
Right, okay.
To give you an idea... of the kind of severity. I went to her house one day. Her car wasn't in the drive. I said, where's your car, Jen? She said, didn't you take it? I said, no, I never drive your car. She said, oh, well, never mind. It'll find its own way home.
Oh, God. Oh, dear.
Yep.
Right.
Oh, dear. It turns out...
What had happened to it then?
Oh, she'd driven it. She'd left it parked very awkwardly a few streets away. I found it and got it back.
Gosh.
So basically, they have to report themselves.
Right.
And that isn't going to happen in a lot of cases, I imagine, like my friend. So, I had to get back to the GP and really be very persuasive and get them to write to the DVLA. He was able to confirm the severity of her condition,
mm-hmm.
and the license was cancelled. But you know, to
so she doesn't people... she doesn't have a car anymore. Then obviously,
no. We got that sold.
Right.
But to expect people with Alzheimer's, some will be able to do it, but a good many will not.
No, of course.
I mean, it invalidates the insurance. It does all kinds of strange things, but.
But before she obviously progressed further with her condition, what sort of a driver was she? Had she become a bit of a dangerous driver in your view, Maggie?
She wasn't so much dangerous. She would forget where she was going and forget what she was doing. So She didn't, and she couldn't work out how to get to it anywhere.
Poor woman. Well, what a good mate you are to go and find her car and take it out of Batty parking and bring it back. She's very lucky to have you as a friend. Maggie, thank you as again. As something I've learned a lot today, not least you get 2 points if you're not wearing your driver's licence as a passenger in a car. Maggie, thank you. Let's come back to this idea, as in one of the newspapers today, Bridget Phillipson writing a hefty piece about how the more needs to be done to help white working class children. This, of course, as Reform UK say, they are the party of the working class. But what is class? D says working class is just a social stratification label to define groups in a society. It's the same social construct as a race or ethnicity. So a person from outside the UK may identify as European, but as with a person that's said to have achieved outside of expectations, their influences and make sense of their view. Okay. On the subject of the colour, Michael says the problem with white people in this country is they live in a world of belief of privileged race. They're not really bothered and will go to the manual work side of things. The parents are just not interested, hence the downfall of many white young children in this country, unless they're born into money. Martin in Lynn. Martin, what are you going to tell me? Good morning.
Yeah, good morning, Nick. I'm from southeast London, Deptford, and
yes,
I went to a pretty average school in the late 70s,
right.
Plus the fact I'm not naturally academic. And I struggled. I didn't get a single CSE or O-level.
Right.
But
that's
at the age
GCSEs
of 16,
in today's currency. On you go, sir. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. And at the age of 16, I went out to work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've worked hard. I got in early, always looking to learn, always looking to help others.
Mm.
And I had a very successful 40-year career in finance. And I was able to retire at 56. And I'm living, I'm 6 years retired now, living up in Cheshire.
The job you got in finance, would you get it today without any qualifications, or would they stipulate you had to have A's or a university degree?
It's changed a little bit, Nick, for sure. But some GCSEs, and A levels will probably be the minimum entry requirement. So yes, that has definitely changed. But this is not about politics. This is not about the individuals, the teachers. It's about parents, right? My mum was a biscuit worker at Pigfreen's in Bermondsey.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was in the post office. They worked every hour God send for me and my sister. We lived in a council tower block in Deptford, but we had everything that you would want, clean beds, roof over your house, holiday once a year where possible.
Roof over your head, yeah.
Roof over your head, sorry, yeah, sorry.
That's right.
It was hard, but they worked. And that, having that work ethic and being shown that way, that's what you need.
And have you passed that on to any youngsters that you've had or whatever?
Yeah. Both my sons, in fact. Both my sons, one went into banking, the other went into recruitment. In fact, ironically, they both just quit their jobs because they've had enough of the corporate rat race, and they're setting up their own business up here in Cheshire.
What sort of business?
Which opens in September. That's going to be a soft play cafe and studio.
Fantastic.
So,
do you want to tell the name, or have we not got a name yet?
Yeah, it's Zed in Stockton Heath.
And that's where we're going to end it. Good luck to the boys. Martin, thank you. I'm almost done for the day. I just want to take you back to an earlier part when we decided to send LBC's Henry Riley down to the Cotswolds. Of course, J.D. Vance is there with a 19-car convoy. He's a controversial character. So how's he gone down to the Cotswolds? Well, Henry asked this person.
Generally, we like to welcome everybody to Tipping Norton, but no, I'd absolutely kick him in the shins.
Just brilliant. That's it. James O'Brien's the other side of the news. I'm back with you tomorrow morning from 7. Meantime, stay safe.
Oh, dear. Work wonders for Tipping Norton in a single clip. It feels like only yesterday that a certain type of politician and commentator was absolutely adamant that the reason why young black kids were performing worst in our schools was because of poor parenting and absent fathers. Now that Bridget Phillipson has identified white working class children as being in particular need of help, I wonder whether those answers from those people will remain the same. No, I don't. I also wonder whether J.D. Vance will be commenting upon the free speech crisis that this country actually is facing after hundreds of people arrested this weekend for carrying placards. No, I don't. Of course he won't. It's weird, isn't it, how those two stories speak to similar levels of hypocrisy.
On your radio, on the LBC app, and...
Play LBC.
Leading Britain's conversation. This is LBC.
From Global's newsroom at 10 o'clock, the Home Secretary, Yvette Cooper, is drawing up plans to close so-called loopholes, stopping foreign criminals being deported. There are concerns current human rights rules are too broad and encouraging spurious appeals. LBC's political editor, Natasha Clark, has the exclusive story.
Yvette Cooper revealed back in March that the Home Office was looking at so-called loopholes in the law. She said that was allowing criminals to avoid being deported. And it comes after a number of high-profile cases where lower tribunal judges had said people could stay in the UK, including one case of a man whose son did not like foreign chicken nuggets. LBC understands that she is now looking to change the law to more tightly define the exceptional circumstances that can be used for some criminals to try to stay in the UK.
Plans were announced over the weekend to deport foreign offenders at conviction without serving jail time in the UK. Al Jazeera says five of its journalists have been killed in an Israeli strike near a hospital in Gaza City. The IDF says it was targeting reporter Anas al-Sharif, accusing him of being a Hamas leader posing as a correspondent. The Committee to Protect Journalists says Israel's failed to provide evidence for the claim. Alan Fisher-Eilan, a reporter in Israel, says it's not the first incident involving Al Jazeera.
Israel shut all of Al Jazeera's offices a couple of years ago near the start of the war. Accusing Al Jazeera of involvement in terrorism, but of course it's a contentious allegation.
A push to reduce road deaths could see the introduction of mandatory eye testing for older drivers. Ministers are also looking at bringing England and Wales' drink drive limit into line with the lower level in Scotland. A new road safety strategy is to be published later in the year. The Education Secretary, Bridget Phillipson, says it is her priority to improve the attainment of white working class students. She's promised to focus on turning around a stark attainment gap linked to class. Hundreds of thousands of young people will pick up their A-level results later in the week. Firefighters have worked through the night tackling a gorse fire on Arthur's Seat in Edinburgh. Emergency services were called to the scene yesterday afternoon. In the city, the FTSE 100 a short time ago was trading up 21 points at 91.17. The pound buys $1.34 and the euro 15. LBC weather, dry, hot and sunny in the south, in the north, cloudier, and then some heavy showers in the west. A high of 30 degrees. From Global's newsroom for LBC, I'm Thomas Watts.
Today's another busy one in the Thing household. Mum's mowing the lawn. Dad's cooking tea. Ash is upstairs spinning tunes. And the twins are on a mission. Luckily, the Things are beating the price cap with a cheaper fixed tariff from British Gas. So, the twins can keep making sure the galaxy stays safe. Search British Gas tariffs. British Gas. Taking care of things. Eligibility and T's and C's apply. To verify, visit britishgas.co.uk/verify.
This is LBC from Global, leading Britain's conversation with James O'Brien.
Three minutes after 10 is the time. So I want to make something absolutely... Good morning, by how rude of me. I do apologise. Good morning, by the way. I hope you had a lovely weekend. Anybody, myself included, who offers support, either tacitly or directly, to any proscribed group in this country is liable to arrest and prosecution. And Palestine Action is a proscribed group in this country. So either tacit or explicit direct support for that organisation on this programme, whether it's you or me, would open up a very real opportunity of arrest and prosecution. So to be absolutely clear, I am not going to be doing that today. I am, of course, going to continue to express support for the people of Palestine and pleas for what they're worth, prayers even, that Benjamin Netanyahu turns away from his path of yet more carnage, just as I can offer support for the people marching in London this weekend calling for the remaining hostages to be released at the very first opportunity without running any particular risk of prosecution or arrest. And that is the law as it stands. But something rather unfortunate has happened. There's a little clip of Yvette Cooper speaking to Nick Ferrari last week that we should probably refresh our memories with, because she's not having a good one, is she, really, Yvette Cooper, in so many ways at the moment. Her and Keir Starmer often seem to be announcing policies completely at odds with the positions that they held in opposition. And I mean, it's possible that they were being inauthentic in opposition and the real Cooper and Starmer are standing up now, but it seems highly unlikely. And this is, look, it could be completely honest, this, but it could also be quite disingenuous, as in the reason why this organisation is proscribed is really serious, but it goes to a different school. I can't tell you at the moment the full reason why it is proscribed, because all we know about them is that they fired paint into the engines of some aeroplanes, and some members of the organisation are being prosecuted accordingly. Before I play you the clip of Yvette Cooper speaking to Nick Ferrari last week, I just want to read you an extra. How many times have I said to you that the letters pages occasionally throw up the most interesting contributions to public discourse? And someone else pointed out to me that, of course they do. It's the print equivalent of what we do every day. How often is a caller considerably more interesting than the presenter, for example, on LBC? Even on this show. I mean, especially on this show. And the answer is almost always, you know, we get callers sometimes who open up avenues we didn't even know existed, let alone we had simply missed. And the reason for that, of course, is the things that we laud most together every morning, which is insight, expertise and experience. Slightly at odds with the traditional phone-in format, where none of those things are historically valued, but here we value them very highly. Just as Wing Commander Andrew Brooks chose to write to the Times today, so he could quite easily have rung us. Just listen to this letter to the Times, published this morning. The Home Secretary, sir, he always must get the etiquette correct, sir, he writes. If the Times was edited by a woman, I don't think it ever has been edited by a woman. The Sunday Times was edited by a woman. She edits the Wall Street Journal now, Emma Tucker, absolutely brilliant journalist. Would it be Madam? Did anyone notice when the Sunday Times was edited by a woman? Did they change it to Madam on the Sorry, I'm getting distracted. Sir, the Home Secretary proposed to ban Palestine Action on the ground of unacceptable criminal damage, that's in quotes, after they infiltrated RAF Briers Norton. That's the event I was just referring to. And this is where Wing Commander Brooks brings experience, expertise and evidence to bear. In the 1980s, he writes, and I don't know why, I am envisioning a handlebar moustache when I read the words Wing Commander. I'm sure I'm doing him a grave disservice. In the 1980s, when I was UK commander of the RAF Greenham Common Cruise Missile Base, so I think we can say he knows of what he speaks, I had a £250,000, and this is in the 1980s, annual budget to repair damage done by peace protesters to the perimeter fence. We had a strong Ministry of Defence police presence to stop intruders, often in a rather Benny Hill fashion. Another mental image conjured up rather splendidly there. The intruders were left in no doubt. So if you don't remember this, or you're too young to know, the peace camps that were largely populated by women and grew up on the environs, on the outskirts of the Greenham Common camp, in protest at the nuclear warheads that were stored there, the US nuclear warheads that were stored there, became, almost folklore. Such was their status and success wouldn't be quite the right word, but prominence, that it is hard to think of anything that stands comparison with it. The intruders were left in no doubt that if they tried to infiltrate the secure storage area with its 90